Okay, but I think we should start because we've got quite a heavy program today. Welcome to the chairperson of the South African Post Office and the team. This is the first time you're appearing before this committee, am I right? Or have you appeared before this committee previously?
Yes.
You have? Okay. So you know the members. It's been such a long time. This committee has been busy with interconnection rates and I don't know what else and what else. All right, so welcome to the team. You'll introduce the members of the team that are with you. And then we put an hour and a half. Thanks, then. Over to you.
Thank you very much to the Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Members of the Portfolio Committee on Communications, the DG of Communications and the team, and also the members of ICASA and other important people in this room today. We are here to present the results, the annual financial results of the year 2008-2009. I am here with the members of the board of the South African Post Office. Over there is Dr. Malebu in Post Office red tie. Please check that. And we've got Usisintombi Msima, who is chair of the Post Office Committee, of the Post Bank Committee. Dr. Malebu is chair of DOCEX Committee within the Post Office. And the CEO will just quickly introduce her team.
Thank you, Chair. Honorable members, just to be quick, I'll just go by how we are seated. To my left is our Group Executive Strategy, Ms. Mariki Lancaster. Our Chief Financial Officer, Mr. Nick Buick. Our Chief Operations Officer, Mr. John Wenzel. Our MD of Postbank and also responsible for financial services, Ms. Toti Memela Kambula. And on the third row, we have Mr. Andrew Nongoko, our GM of International Relations. I think they'll pick up their hands for us to sing. International Government and International Relations, Mr. Ndala Mnisi, responsible for our consumer services, Mr. Twix Kripu, the Group Executive for Government and International Relations, Mr. Molefema Tibe, our MD of CFG and responsible for the entire logistics business, Ms. Mandiza Mbegeni, our Group Executive Legal, and Mr. Malisela Kasimbe, our Group Executive Supply Chain Management, our Chief Information Officer, Ms. Louise van der Bank, Mr. Maputa Dias, our Group Executive Human Resources, the person who's responsible for our PR and communications, Mr. Lungile Lose, next to him, and behind them, the last person is, he always calls himself the executive who runs the business that runs the business, is Mr. Jan Raskoti, responsible for our mail business. Thank you. Honorable Chairperson, we brought this team here today because we wanted to show Parliament that there is nobody acting at the Post Office Executive. Everybody is a confirmed executive. And also, you know, we always work around other programs around this time to make sure that we attend, but also attend to other business in Cape Town. I'm very proud on behalf of the South African Post Office to present the annual report, particularly because on the 12th of November, the Johannesburg Stock Exchange recognized us. We got an award as the best report in terms of state-owned enterprises, focusing particularly on corporate governance reporting. So we believe that as a post office, we are on the right track. And this work is the work that is within the strategy that we worked on with the Department of Communications, where we together crafted the trajectory of the post office from the beginning to now. And at this point, the trajectory that we are operating on is that of the growth, development, and sustainability. So the results that we are presenting to you are results that we are hoping
are taking us through that path of growth, development, and sustainability. The path that we are referring to has been a path which at the heart of it was driven or is driven by transformation. We present to you a slide which shows the trading profit of the post office from 2001 with projections to 2011. What that shows is a company that has had difficult times, that has turned around with the first wave of transformation that took it to a point of profitability. But whilst we began to see the results of being a profitable company, we recognize that transformation is deeper than we had anticipated. We had to begin to look at issues of systems, controls, people, to be able to ensure that we build a sound foundation for the post office in order to ensure that we get into that road to sustainability. We are sitting here today with results that were very comfortable in the sense that very many companies in our country and in the world have not managed to get the results that will be presented to you by the CEO and the CFO. And as a post office, we are proud that during very difficult times, we have managed to show profitability, but also continue with our path in terms of having launched the sustainability reporting that does not only recognize profitability from a financial perspective, but puts the planet and the people at the center. In terms of going forward, we recognize as the post office that it is a long way to go. Transformation is a journey, as we all always understand. We're sitting with challenges still around issues of human capital that we believe that we'll be able to address, and the CEO will talk more to that. We came here in the beginning of our term as the board, showing that we're operating with temporal labor of 48%, with permanent labor of 52%, and we presented to this committee that we were not comfortable with that and will do everything in our power to change the situation. We are proud to say at this point we're sitting at 70% permanent and 30% temporary. It is something that we're still not comfortable with and are looking at better ways of coming up with a best model, which we are still crafting at this point and will present at a later stage to this committee where we come for other reasons in the beginning of the year with our strategic plan. But at this point, I would like to say that we are happy that the programs that we set are on board and we are continuing, and we would like to thank the committee for the support, the oversight that has been a very useful oversight in the sense that we've got constructive criticism that has set us on the right path and ensuring that we are being monitored in a way that is very helpful and constructive. I now hand over to the CEO. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Honorable members, it is indeed an honor for us to be here, coming through a very, very challenging year and still facing very challenging times that we are projecting that in the next coming 18 months will still be with us. However, with the guidance of the board, I think the guidance of the shareholder, and really the commitment of the Sapoans, as we call ourselves, the family of Sapo, we are really proud to be reporting the annual results for 2008 and 2009. We have put measures in making sure that 2009 and 10 will not be as worse, but in a very challenged environment. We will continue, and I will indicate later what is it that we're doing. As a vision of the post office, as we had put it together through a strategy session where we reviewed, as the chair had indicated, the second transformation of the organization, we are aspiring to be recognized among the leading providers of postal and related services in the world. And I would like to say that we are on the right path to that. In terms of our mission, to enable the nation to efficiently connect with the world by distributing information, goods, financial, and government services, by really leveraging our broad reach and embracing change technology and innovation. That is, in fact, the key the survival of postal services in the world in terms of how you best respond to that. As we can see, the global trends for the postal environment can be categorized in four areas: optimization, maximizing the efficiency and effectiveness of the existing processes, systems, and network performance. I think as a South African post office, we have really put processes in place, and we have put plans that are in fact going to be responding to this issue. Some of those programs that I'll speak about later will have far-reaching impact in terms of what we're doing in the modernization of the post office in order for us to optimize the systems and processes that we have. Innovation, I think this is one area that we have really concentrated on, and some of the products that we've put into the market are starting to really reap benefits for us, like our e-postal segment that we've looked at, that we have seen revenues grow in a way that we had not expected. But it also shows that, in fact, that our customers are responding to these innovative products that we've put into place. Diversification, making sure that you enter new lines of business through investment in new capabilities, especially based on the infrastructure that we have and the infrastructure that we need to keep on expanding on. But also globally, partnerships and acquisitions across the globe and also with other partners that might bring in competence where you don't have and you cannot, in fact, be able to grow it. And the issue of globalization, the South African Post Office is a global player. We move mail across the world, we move parcels across the world, and therefore in terms of making sure that we ensure that the globalization by expanding and capturing business opportunities beyond our local borders becomes one of the key pillars that we're looking at the post office. In terms of the local trends, for the first time last year, after a period of about 3 to 4 years, we saw mail volume decline, which was in contradiction to what we used to experience before in terms of the global world, where globally people were, other postal operators were seeing mail volume decline. We were seeing, in fact, an increase. But last year, I think because of economic conditions, we started to see the mail volume decline of 5.8%. But increased focus in governance and corporate citizenry, as a country, as government, there has been increased focus in governance, and the chair was just referring to our report, our annual report that we put through the test to ensure that we do. It is, in fact, the third year that we are entering the annual report under the JSC and Chartered Secretariat Institution for people to really view what is it that we do, but also for us to get some learnings. And I'm proud to say this is the third time we have been nominated twice in the 3 years. And we won twice, and we were nominated three times. Each every year we are finalists, and we won twice, which is the first year we entered in this year. Sustainable development and environmental impact. I will indicate later how, through our triple bottom line reporting, we are responding to the challenges of environment as a South African Post Office, and what is it that we are putting in place to ensure that happens. Commercialization and the regulation of the financial services. As scheduled in the agenda today, we are looking at the post-bank corporatization in the bill, but also in terms of how does the regulation of financial services, how is it going to impact the post office? Social transformation and embracing universal service obligation and robust financial management in a very economically challenged environment. In terms of our themes, the growth of our top-line revenue, the delivery of our shareholder mandate, improving efficiency and effectiveness, satisfying our customer by being consistent and innovative, a high-performance culture in the organization, and contributing positively to our communities and environment. In terms of the previous year, our financial highlights captured below. We saw a revenue increase of 8% to 6 billion rand, the first time that the post office has reached this number. Total assets grew by 13% to 8.6. Our post-bank deposits grew by 14%. I think this is testimony to the unbanked and the underbanked market within South Africa, that we do believe it is, in fact, the target market that we should be concentrating on. And there are huge opportunities and, in fact, huge needs that people still have within the target market. Our cash and investments grew by 13% to 6 billion. And we managed to generate from our operating activities some cash that came out to 650. I do know that honorable members do ask all the time around, are we generating enough money to be able to sustain this organization on its own? And I think it is our aim to be to ensure long-term sustainability of this organization. And we have grown our capital expenditure and increased it grew to 65%, and we spent $643 million last year. In terms of our other highlights, in terms of what we have managed to do, our address expansion program, which has been a very, very successful program, and I think a very, very integral program for our country, where we managed to address the people who have not been addressed to ensure that all South Africans can be economically active. They can be able to comply to all the rules. The RICA has just come in. FICA is quite an issue that people need to have. And having an address not only makes you economically active, but it gives you an identity about who you are. Last year only we rolled out 1.7 million. In the past 3 years, the number of new addresses that we've rolled out is over 5.3 million, and most of them in the rural areas. In terms of our achievements within those addresses is that, in fact, the system that we utilize for the addresses is a unique system that we've developed for South Africa that we are now showcasing in the world, and I'll indicate that in a little bit more. We have made postal and financial services available to all South Africans. We service 66.9 million customers through our consumer services channel through our retail offices. Our depositors book grew by 13%, and our quality service, as at the end of 31st of March, is standing at 94.2. And in terms of our tariff increase, because the issue of affordability still remains an issue within our country, that our tariff increases were below CPI. In terms of infrastructure, we added 45 new offices and renovated and upgraded 75 of those offices to bring it to a total of 120, and also enabled economic opportunity. We're coming from a level 5 BEE contributor, and in the year 2008 and 2009, we in fact moved to being a level 4 BEE contributor as per the Empowered Act issue. Honorable Chair, when we came to the Portfolio Committee the last time, we did introduce a new business model that we are pursuing as a South African Post Office that focuses mainly on those three business units, with new business units that we are creating, which is the Properties and ICT business unit, being in the making to go through with that. Therefore, our main logistics and financial services, and I'd like to quickly and take you through some of the achievements that we have seen in the previous year. In our mail business, which is the business that is regulated, and it in fact is the business that enjoys the monopoly that we have, what we were faced with in terms of the challenges was, is how do we respond to the technological advances that have happened. I've indicated that we have positioned the e-postal, the e-fulfillment has been completed, and we have seen positive revenue growth. In our logistics, we have consolidated and are left with the phase of now putting our speed services courier into our courier freight group into one logistics offering that will be able to offer all the logistics offering to our customers in an integrated solution going forward. Our financial services still in last year continued to perform exceptionally well. I have indicated the growth in our depositors book, I've indicated the growth in our asset book, and our post bank still did very, very well in terms of that. But the focus that we are looking at is making sure that we do corporatize Post Bank in 2010. In our properties business, we are looking at unlocking value in our property portfolio. Our valuation increased from about 700 million to a billion rand in 2008 and 2009 when we went through an evaluation exercise. And in our ICT business, we believe that the infrastructure that we've got and the investments that we are doing in the infrastructure, in the IT infrastructure, positions us to be able to assist and making sure that we can bridge the digital divide, but also to be able to look at ICT services that we can offer together with government in that area. Through our ICT also, we are in the process of the Trust Center accreditation process, and I'll give an update of where we are from that point. In terms of dealing with our customers, we have extended our services in SADC, in the southern region through our logistics business and some of the programs that we've put through in the money transfer and other programs that we can do as a region together for us to be able to make sure that we deal with it. But to also ensure quality, we are undergoing an ISO accreditation process that will ensure that not only do we speak about quality, but it can be attested and tested every time to ensure that we are, in fact, attaining the standards that we need to be able to attain. The chairperson of the board indicated that within the major challenges that we still have as an organization is around our human resources capital, and it's an area that we are putting a lot of focus in making sure that we deal with. Skills development and training, a major focus for us to be able to go through. Recognition of prior learning programs. Even if in the post office we may not have people who may have the right qualifications, but what we have are people who have experience and have worked. And through a recognition of prior learning program, we are seeing very, very good results out of people being having to have their experience and expertise being recognized in terms of qualifications that we have. We are currently reviewing our staffing model, and in fact, we continue to achieve our employment equity targets. And through our employee assistance program, we've introduced a wellness program that is just not looking at issues of HIV/AIDS, but we are looking at the total wellness of a being, and we ask people to participate in that. And we've seen an increase to 47% in the previous year in our total wellness program. We are just coming out in about a month from having some of our sports activities dealing with all our SADC region, and they were hosted by Botswana Post, where we had employees within the post office, the Botswana Post Office employees engaging in sports activities across the border in order to do all those issues, and that's the expansion that we do in our wellness issues. As far as our response to environmental challenges, one of the major issues around the environmental challenges that we have as a country, as an organization, was for us to sit down and put an environmental strategy in place. How are we going to respond as an organization to do that? On that basis, in our plan, we had indicated that in the 2008-09, we want to baseline all the environmental issues that we have put in through. So we have put it into four major areas. The carbon emissions, we've baselined our carbon emissions, and we are sitting at 45 kilotons of carbon emissions that we had in 2008-09. And out of that, we then developed a target that says we will set up an offset program, and an offset program would be how do you respond and how do you deal with the carbon emissions as an organization by planting trees and making sure that you can have an offset program that deals with that. We have partnered with Trees for Africa to ensure that we plant about 900 trees per annum for the three coming years in order to be able to offset our carbon emissions. And I think we partnered also with the Ministry of Water and Forestry. And we have, in fact, gone through and planted 300 trees in this particular year, 2009, to deal with the offsets of last year. Our paper recycling programs that we've introduced, 279 tons of waste paper collected by 31st of March, and we have intensified that program in this year. At the end of March, we were piloting energy saving programs in four major areas of our areas where we had to measure first how much energy we consume in those four major areas, which is our 20 mail, our NPC, one of our offices, the church square building, which is our regional office for 20, in that for us to be able to do that. The idea for that is for us to see how much energy we use and replace all the lights with the right lights for us to be able to do. I am proud to announce that we have, in fact, joined the Carbon Disclosure Program. I just come from a meeting last week when they were preparing as business together and preparing together with government for the Copenhagen Summit, where we are saying as the South African Post Office, as part of business, this is what we believe as a country we should be doing in the Carbon Disclosure Program. And it's a program that we will continue dealing with. In terms of 2009 and 10, as we continue looking at that, our growth strategy still remains. Let us grow our core business, our mail business, ensure that we make sure that the postal delivery remains the core business of SAPO, and ensure that we can still grow that with introducing new technologies, which is our e-postal for that. If we go through for our logistics, in terms of our logistics, I think our logistics business in terms of cost reduction has done exceptionally well in the past year. However, our logistics business is still owing to the fact that it responds very quickly to any economic changes that we have had, and therefore our revenue line has not grown as much as we need to do. So in order to continue with streamlining and efficiency programs, integration of our transport services to ensure that we offer a seamless logistics solution is one of the major programs that we are looking at. We are also going through and positioning our logistics offering to the market. We have undergone major processes of ensuring that government, as a major logistics a customer, has been provided or has been positioned in, and we have seen quite a good response from Department of Education, Department of Home Affairs, and Department of Health in terms of the processes that we can do, where we can now offer a full logistics from warehousing, distribution, and demand planning for our customers. And it has really helped not only to reduce costs on our side, but also to reduce costs for our partners. I just want to take a pause and just talk about the financial services, and this is mainly our Post Bank, where we're talking about the corporatization of Post Bank. And just to say, within this corporatization process, there is only one goal and one goal only, to ensure that you corporatize Post Bank, to allow government to retain 100% ownership of the bank, but to also enable it to run as efficiently as a second-tier bank, providing simple and very affordable products for the broader masses of our people. And what we aim to do is to register Postbank as a public company wholly owned by SAPO on behalf of government. The legislative process that is currently underway is going to enable us to do that, but also register Postbank as a financial service provider. That process has already started, and also look at the bank in terms of the bank to enable it to be part of the banking fraternity. Within our Post Bank, and I think we'll have a detailed discussion in terms of the bill, but and I do know that the chair with the executives have come into the committee to talk about the Post Bank positioning where we're going through. We believe that our Post Bank is in fact the bank, the people's bank, that we need to be able to create as a country. However, within our financial services business, also we are looking at other key government programs. For example, SASA, in terms of how we can assist to reduce the cost, but also to be able to bank most of our beneficiaries for that. And we have SASA. SASA is a security social agency for government that is under the Department of Social Development.
Yeah. The CO Part 1 acronym.
Yes.
ESO. I know you say ISO, but ISO means Fundi Sindhu. I don't know what ISO should be.
Okay. Honorable member, I will remember that. Okay. Would you like me to explain the international standards of operations? Yes. Thank you. I apologize for that, honorable member. I'll try to remember, Chair. If we then move on, is that in order to just go through and quickly go through some of the highlights in terms of our financial performance, our group profit before tax was down by 14% to 482 million. We have produced good results, but in terms of the economic challenges, we saw a drop of 14%. However, our group operating revenue grew up by 8%. Our capital expenditure grew by 65%. In terms of our addressing system that you spoke about, our new addressing system, which is a geocoded address that we give to people in the rural areas, that not only allows for us to be able to deliver mail, but it is also an area where it allows us to be able, as a country, to can locate a dwelling utilizing the GIS. So it is not only for the post office. We have seen that we have used it together with SAPS, and it can also help in emergency services, because once people give us their addresses with the geocode, we can be able to say, for example, the program we ran with the police, this is an area that you can either walk to, you have to cycle to, or you can drive to, because the terrain is a terrain that we go through every day, and that's how we outline our processes for delivery, and it helps for the response that people require. But what we are also proud of is that our new postal addressing system has in fact been accepted by the Universal Postal Union, which stands for the UPU, which is the conglomeration, global conglomeration of all postal operators in the world. As part of their S42, that's the name of the standards that we have. And we are only one of the 17 countries whose postal addressing system has been accepted into the global world. That is, so we are very, very proud of that. With the SABS, the South African Bureau of Standards, we have just in last month, they had a workshop on an addressing format where our postal addressing was one of the key issues, and it now has met the criteria of the South African National Standards, addressing national standards of 1883, and it complies with that. And it has been adopted by SABS for the country to use it as a whole. So it's one of the achievements that we've seen. In terms of technology, we won several awards at the top 100 award winner category as an excellent management of systems. We were listed again in the World Mail Awards, where we were part of the top three in the category of transformation. And we are part of the CPSI Awards as innovative enhancement for the implementation of our STEP project, which was a full project that we managed to do on time, on budget, and with effectiveness. And last year, we also got the National Business of the Year Award. And that is just about the start of the award. The others I will cover at the end when we do that. That is for 2008. I'd just like at this point to hand over to the CFO to take us through the financial overview.
Thank you. Good morning on all the members. I'll just briefly go through and drill a little bit more deeper into the numbers. These are the results for March 2009. That's for the year March 2009. As the CEO has just mentioned, revenue grew by 8% to 6 billion, the first time that we actually achieved that. If one looks at the year as it progressed, we had a very, very strong first quarter. Then from the second quarter, the economic crunch hit us, and we saw a big drop-off in mail volumes. I think mail volumes tend to be a barometer of the country as well, and as the country GDP contracts, our mail volumes have contracted similarly. We did, however, put a lot of very, very quick cost controls in place, and we managed to limit our cost growth to 10%. If you look at the two key drivers from a cost perspective, they are people and fuel. And last year, in the last financial year, we ended up settling at around about 11% with our staff, which was higher than CPI. But the big driver from a cost increase was the fuel price, which is, as you, if you remember, in those days, the fuel price was extremely high, and it had a major impact on our costs. As a result, our profitability declined by 14%, but still very, very healthy at nearly 500 million. And our profit margins decreased by 2% from 10.1% to 8.1% for the year. Our balance sheet, despite the lower profitability, continued to perform very strongly. Our total assets up by nearly a billion, or over a billion rand, up 13%, mainly driven by the growth in our post-bank deposits of 14%. So you can see that the balance sheet did well. Our net asset value, which is an indication of the solvency of the organization, up 23% to close on 2 billion rand. Our return on assets down slightly, 7.3% to 5.6%, again driven by the lower profit for the year. But I think despite the lower profits, we still managed to extract considerable cash from the business, and our cash flow from a trading performance was up 113% to 650 million rand for the year. Just looking at the individual, as the CEO has mentioned, we have a number of subsidiaries. That's the group position, the profit before tax down by 14%. Our taxation bill was slightly lower, however, resulting in our profit after tax only down by 4% to 362 million rand for the year. The post office itself, this is the post office excluding our subsidiaries, but including Postbank. At the moment, the Postbank still operates as a profitable division of the post office. And was one of the key areas of driver in terms of the profit of the organization. Profit before tax down 11, and profit after tax up slightly 1%. So the post office itself as a company did well during the year. DocX, this is another subsidiary of ours. This operates in the legal fraternity, provides courier services there, had a very good year. Not a large business, but extremely profitable. Profit after tax up 21% to 6.7 million for the year. Our courier and freight group, this is our courier business, which is CFG, and you can see that it was particularly hard hit by the economic conditions, revenue only up by 2% for the year. However, they managed to control their costs very well and expenses only up by 5% despite the high fuel increases. And that had a negative impact on the profit, which actually was a loss for the year of 21.6 million rand. On the balance sheet side, just to drill down into the 13% growth in assets a little bit more, you can see that non-current assets were grown by 23% and current assets up by 11%. This is mainly as a result of our investment of Postbank deposits. We make sure that every rand we get from our depositors is invested and ring-fenced, and I think that has been one of the main drivers of our balance sheet performance. On the cash flow side, we said that our cash operating cash was up by 13%. We have three sources of cash flow in the organization. First of all, our operating performance. And you can see the operating performance generated nearly 650 million rand. Our increase in Postbank deposits of 404 million. And the fourth line there, which is our subsidy which we received from government of 369 million. So those are the three sources of cash. And that enabled us to make investments of 1.3 billion, which is basically a split between our CAPEX and our investments on Postbank money. We have tried over a number of years now to diversify our revenue, and I think this was the first year it really, really did help us. You can see that in 2008, 2009, our mail business is still our biggest business at 63% of revenue. That declined by to 61% in 2008, 2009, but you can see that our other businesses which we're focusing on started to pull through, and our financial services went up from 23 to 24% and courier up from 12 to 13. So we're starting to see the benefits of the diversification strategy in the organization. This is a summary of our CAPEX for the year, looking at back over the last number of years now. And for the first time, we managed to grow our CAPEX investments despite the tough economic environment. We spent nearly 650 million rand on capital expenditure, actual spending of 421 and committed of 226. That's up by nearly 250 million rand over the same period last year. This is how we invested it, and you can see that all of it is really invested in infrastructure. Our two big areas of investment are property. That's all our postal outlets across the country, 341 million rand during the year. And secondly, which is becoming an even more important part of our business now going forward, is investment in IT of 276 million. And you can see that is a forecast going forward for the next 4 or 5 years. We're planning to invest around about 4 billion rand in capital expenditure. We've had to prune it back slightly in the current financial year to 500 million because of the economic environment, but we're anticipating that it will start to accelerate again from 2010 to 2011. And really, you can see that the IT investments actually take over from the property, and over 50% of our investment going forward will be information technology. We do, as I mentioned, receive a subsidy from government, and this shows you over the number of years what we have used the money for. It has been extremely well spent. It actually helps us fund our universal service obligations where we are obliged in terms of our license to open outlets in areas which are not profitable, in rural areas. We are also obliged to deliver mail into remote areas of the country which are obviously not economically viable. So there is a universal service element to the subsidy that we receive, However, that is only a very small part of it. The bulk of it is actually invested in a property where we're also obliged to roll out, in terms of a license, around about 100 outlets a year. So we are making use of a subsidy funding in part to do that. Lastly, I just wanted to just round off with some trends just to show you that this is not the first year, and we can see that our profitability has improved over the last 4 to 5 years, with the exception of our current year, where it was down slightly by 19%. Our profit before tax in the income statement, you can see that we started off very strongly and then has declined over the last 3 years. Those first 2 years, 2004, 2005, 2005, 2006, was when we ironed out all our balance sheet issues. We converted our pension fund to defined contribution. We sorted out our post-retirement medical aid obligations, and they helped us with non-trading impact, positive non-trading impact to our income statement. And you can see that over the last 3 years, it's been purely driven by trading performance of the organization. That's just the numbers, basically showing the trend and the difference between the profit over the years. And you can see in the 204, 205, 205, 206, you can see the impact of the post-retirement medical arrangements and also the pension fund contribution, the impact that had on our profits. And over the last 3 years, you can see that it's been driven by trading performance. Revenue, again, showing the same increase, very strong performance over the years. And then this shows you our CPI, our tariff increases compared to CPI, and you can see that over the last 3 years, we've actually been below inflation in terms of our tariff increases. So our services are becoming more and more affordable every year. Cost increases, we've managed, this is an area that we've really focused on to try and keep our costs under control, and you can see that we have managed to keep them under manageable levels despite the underlying increases in some of our major input costs. Return on assets, not where we would like it to be, but certainly heading in the right direction, around about between 6 and 7%, so relatively strong. Asset growth every year for the last 4 years has been double digits, and we would hope to see that continue over the years to come. Our depositors funds, this is our post-bank deposits, and you can see that, again, this has been double digits over the last 4 years, ranging between 11 and 14%, also strong growth in the bank. And lastly, I'd just like to end off on this slide. This is a study comparing us to our peers that was done by Accenture recently, where it looks at all of our competitors like Royal Mail, Deutsche Post, some of the other major postal operators in the world, and has tracked our performance against some of these other major postal operators. And overall, based on those criteria from a financial performance, they have rated us number 2 in the world in terms of our financial performance. Thank you very much, and I'll hand back to our CEO to wrap up.
Thank you. Just in terms of, this is the reality of 2009-10. I think the economic trends continue to impact negatively on us. The decline in interest income is going to have a major impact on our post-bank business. Mail volumes continue to decline. We're hoping that with the new indicators that the economy is picking up, that in the next financial year we'll start seeing a rise again in terms of our mail volumes. Our retail sales that have had a major impact on our logistics volume, and as indicated by the CFO in the performance of the logistics, its business is still suffering the reduction in our volumes as we continue going through that. I think as we go through, the issues of the staff costs, the fuel costs, and capital investment remains one of the issues that we need to do to be managing very, very prudently. We started last year in 2008-09 around September together with the board, where we put a very, very stringent cost containment drive to be able to ensure that not only do we spend very precisely, but we make sure that we make it effective and it should not impact on the customers. In our capital investment, we had to revise our capital programs as we had been looking at spending about 1. Something billion, but because of the reality of the funds that we have to look at those numbers and say what is it that we are going to do with, obviously, the universal service obligation as a major priority for us to be able to go through. But I also just want to
get to a point where I've closed in terms of how we have in this year managed to get to some point. And those are some of, in this very particular year, that some of the awards that we have managed to gather at the South African Post Office in this particular year, where we've seen in the October month two awards from the Public Sector Excellence Awards. From the BMF, we've got the Most Progressive Company. The chair had indicated that we won the state entities category in terms of the Excellence Award in reporting. Our bank, Post Bank, was rated the fifth most preferred brand in retail banking by the Sunday Times and Mighty No Results in South Africa. So it's one of the things that says the Post Bank is in fact at its rightful place. We have gotten from Oracle International the recognition of the PUTA organization providing financial services in a very efficient and innovative way. We are also, hopefully in next week on the 24th of November, we will win this award. It's a global award for the implementation of our process mapping that we have done, in fact, within the organization, in transforming the organization, but working at rewriting all our processes, but going through a process mapping that future strategies will be announcing the winners on the 24th. From Impumelelo's top empowerment companies, we are nominated as one, and our Post Bank won the second best card design in April in 2009 from Viva. And I would like to thank you all. Thanks, Shepherd. I think at this point we will give over to you to take questions.
Thank you very much. I think it's a very impressive report. By all accounts, I mean, the Post Office is, I think, past its worst nightmare. We're seeing a very successful company. So from my side, congratulations to the team. It's done very, very well. Let him go. Now I've got two or three questions. And I'm sure members will have some also. You're showing a very strong financial position. But isn't this figure being distorted by the higher levels of savings that people are putting into the Post Bank? And if you take out the cash that you have as a result of those deposits, what will be your actual position as a company? That's the first question. And then the second thing is the courier and freight group. I mean, it seems to be serious problems. Is this the first year, or what has been the history of this particular company? And if there are structural problems there, can you just take us through those? And then from my side, the last thing is that you've come through a very difficult strike. Are all the issues resolved, particularly in the Gauteng province, where you had wildcat strike action or ill-disciplined action on the part of your staff, etc.? If you can give us an update on that. Are those issues resolved? Is everything settled? Backlogs cleared out? I think that update would be useful for members. Any other questions? Let's just recognize the hand. All right. The hand so far. Let's take one more. Julie?
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. First of all, I also want to add my voice to congratulate. I think it is, particularly for this committee, it is very nice to have an institution here that is just flying through the annual report, not, as you indicated, not without also facing some difficulties due to a variety of matters that affect your business model, etc. Can I just quickly ask, I'm happy that the chairperson has asked some of those questions, because I also wanted to pose, especially the one on the strike action that you've had. But could I just ask you, if you look at the outlook for the coming year, are you going to be able to bite the bullet and push through, or will you require staff retrenchments in order to curtail, you said your major costs were people and fuel. Now, we don't know what the fuel prices are going to do, etc., but if you could just answer what you see in the year ahead. If you have a sort of a decline in your business, will that be necessary? Then secondly, Your reference to the I just wanted to page back. I've made some notes, Chair, if you will just allow me. You said that your post bank component, your postal services, and then you have a smaller section, in the, which is your financial services. Where exactly is the post bank positioned? Is it in the financial services component? And therefore, if it is being corporatized, it will not affect you as much. Can I just get an idea of your future planning for to make sure that your diversification strategy really delivers the necessary outcome? Chair, just one more question. I made a note here. Yes, you indicated your carbon emissions, and I must say this is very interesting. It's the first time that I've been in a presentation where the footprint is actually sort of also being sort of identified, determined, and then strategies developed around that. Obviously, it's necessary, especially the freight companies use plastics, etc. What percentage of that does it constitute? You're using quite a large sort of component of paper. Well, if Parliament would ever look at that, I think we're killing trees by the forest, Chairperson, if we look at that. But nevertheless, if we can know what is the position there, and then secondly, how do you really manage your vehicles? Chair, it's very often it seems to be visible that certain state institutions are sending vehicles around with huge carbon emissions. You can just see it. Do you oversee that? Do you curtail sort of do you manage that process as well? How do you manage it? Because maybe you can also set a standard for the public service and municipalities, particularly because they're having buses that are just too ghastly to see how they drive around with carbon emissions all around. That is, how do you see you're saying integrate transport services to offer a seamless logistics solution. How? What and how is that? And that is on your page, presentation page 11. Thank you. Thank you, Chair.
Get responses for some of the issues that have been raised.
I'll just deal with the strike issue, Honourable Chair, and then the CEO will work with her team on the rest of the questions. I would just like to indicate that we do, as a board, have a joint task team with the Communication Workers Union on transformation, where overall, at a strategic level, we deal with issues in terms of the strategy and how we go forward. And actually, we attribute a lot of the achievements in terms of the turnaround to that collaboration with the union. The strike is something that we know in a democratic country, there is space that has been created, and we also have other structures within the executive team that basically work directly with the union. I'm saying this because in terms of handling the issues going forward, we did have a bit of a rough time, during the strike, and we just had a meeting with the leaders of the union last week where we're basically, reviewing some of the difficult times that we've gone through in terms of how we deal with them going forward. And out of that, we have agreed that we continue to use the structures that we have, and also from its side, we recognize that, we have issues that we're having to deal with to ensure. So out of that, we've come up with a monitoring, approach to monitor the agreements that already exist within the post office between ourselves as the company and the union, but also the area of the labor model, which is basically one of the things that
we're having to deal with, you know, from our side as well. So what we've agreed upon is to just work together on a very clear strategy on how we deal with the model of labor, and hence I said in the beginning of the presentation that we would like, you know, the committee to afford us the space once we've worked on the preferable labor model to be able to present it next year. But at this point, we do believe that, you know, we have had a very good meeting of leaders, and we are in a position to say that we are hopeful that we continue. I mean, it was a difficult time for everybody in the country, every company, and we understood that, you know, some of us, I mean, in terms of the companies, we also had to face, you know, face a strike. But at this point, we are back on track, and also the structures are looking at it in a more strategic and focused way.
Thank you, Chair. Honourable members, I think that is why the team is here with me to assist me in the questions. But I will deal with the issues, and the others and indicate who will deal with it. Let me just add on to what the chairperson has indicated. The threat that we experienced, in fact, as an organization was a major, major issue, because the last time we had a strike in the organization was 2000-2001, and to the magnitude of issues that are there. I would like to say, as management, one of the issues that really we learned quite extensively is that the relationship that we have with labor representatives cannot ever be taken for granted. And therefore, it becomes an issue that we need to deal with, improve on, and make sure that we can make sure that we address all issues that I have. I'm saying that because some of the issues that led to the strike issues were things that I believe as management we could have addressed a little bit earlier. But due to reasons that we can advance, we probably did not. And therefore, I think as a learning point is that we need to be able to do that much, much more quicker. And that's the process that we have started engaging in. After the strike, despite the board, what the chair has spoken about, we have said as management and sort of said, what is the post-mortem? How do we make sure that we deal that? And we are now starting to engage and going through all the issues, looking at all outstanding issues to go through with. In terms of the agreement that we have had, the implementation of all the issues that are within the agreement are in progress, and they will continue. For members to know is that we, in fact, have included for the first time in our issues another two-year issues that we need to deal with, and that will deal with the issues of salary differentials, or probably known as salary anomalies and other issues that we have, and how we are going to address that as an organization. As a very dedicated program that we make sure that we include in our budget, we make sure that we deal with all those issues that we have. We have also looked within the issue of our agreement that we are going to be addressing the issue of flexible staffing, or well known as the labor broking staff. That how in the world are we going to make sure that as an organization, firstly, that the treatment of employees by whoever the service providers that we have has to be compliant, firstly, with the values and the policies of the organization. Secondly, with the compliance of the rules and regulations of this country. And thirdly, in terms of making sure that we can sit here and say we do know and we can attest to all those issues. And those are all the things that we are putting in and working through our programs as we currently sit. In terms of staff retrenchment, we are not looking forward to any. In terms, there are no plans to go into staff retrenchments for now. And what we are saying is that that would be the last resort if we ever have to come through. In terms of our projections, if you look at the outlook for 2009-10, 2010-11, there are no staff retrenchments in place. However, we do agree that as an organization, further modernization of our processes and other issues are going to have to be looked at and see how we can be able to improve that. And hence the training and development programs that we are looking at, not only for dealing with the South African Post Office now, but dealing with the future South African Post Office as the business model requirements. For example, our financial services area that is not only going to require banking, but financial services experience. How do you upskill and upgrade people to those levels? Our ICT business, how do you make sure that we can upskill people? In our mail business, where we have the electronic and the e-postal issues unit that we have put into place, we've in fact started that process where we started with post office employees that we put through a training program so that they can be the computer operators, the machine operators of our three plants that we now have on electronic postal, on e-postal that we currently employ. Those are the employees that we are taking from the post office to be able to train in, into that. So as we look at our training program and how we deal with those issues, we are looking at them from a point that says we need to not only prepare the post office for now, but we are looking at the post office in the future in terms of what we deal with. So we are intent as an organization to ensure that we can retain as many people as possible, train those that are that we need to train, and find a way that we can be able to take it through. In terms of the carbon emissions, I just want to go through, because the question is very a very interesting one. It is a new environment for us, and I think it's a new environment for all. But I think as an organization, we have in fact taken the first step in ensuring that we do. So to answer some of the questions, within our carbon emissions, in fact, we have various areas where it comes. It comes from our vehicles. It comes from our the way that our the planes that we use in terms of measuring the planes that transport our mail. But it also comes from measuring transportation by employees. If you are coming to Cape Town, there is an element of carbon emission that you do. And it also comes into how much do I personally contribute to carbon emission if I come to work. So those are all the facets that we are going into. But what we started in the priority areas that we've put in is right in our fleet management, in our forklift management, and in areas that we are going to now get into the air conveyance of mail areas that we do. For our fleet management, what we have looked at is, firstly, the type of fuel that we use, and we found ourselves using leaded fuel when we could have been looking at unleaded fuel and all that. And we've gone through a process that in this particular year, we are converting most of our fleet into the unleaded issues that we have looked into. We've looked at our motorbikes, and this is a technical, I'll just say it as it is, but those are just all the programs that we have. In our motorbikes, there are things that are saying that we're converting them from one point to another stroke engine, which is lower, that uses less issues. And we've looked at our forklifts. We've looked at all the other issues in terms of our carbon emissions that we need to do. We are also looking at how we can influence the manufacturers of vehicles within the country. And Toyota, I think, has been one that has come through in terms of doing hybrid cars. Because when you look at the number of fleet we have, John, you'll help me, over 1,500 fleet that we have running just on regional distribution. And we believe we have enough power to can influence some of those issues. Therefore, how we do it, and those are the debates that we are going through. That is just on the fuel side. Then we have the energy side, and we are then going to be moving on to the water side. So it is an evolving program that I think we have embraced quite significantly for us to ensure that we can go through, and we are going to go through all that. And I think within our plan, you will see all those activities that go through.
See, we have very strong privacy laws in our country.
Privacy?
Privacy laws in our country. I hope we're not going to be measuring personal gas emissions of staff members and all. You're going down to very detailed levels now.
Okay, we will make sure that we do not do that. Chair. I think in terms of, I would ask the CFO to deal with the issues of the savings issue. Our COO and the MD of CFG will deal with them, the CFG issue, and our MD of Postbank will deal with the financial services.
Thank you. Just on the question of Postbank, if you look at the financial performance of the group over the last year, the two areas of cash generation were Postbank deposits, 404 million, and its own the post own performance, and that generated cash of $650 million. So you can see that the organization is still sustainable. Of that $649 million, $200 million of that was interest earned on investments. So the Postbank does have a significant impact on the financial performance of the group. However, the group remains profitable, even measured on its own without Postbank. The Postbank operating profit for the year, of the 480 odd operating profit, 100 million of that was generated by Postbank. We manage even though it's a division, we manage it on an arm's length basis, so it has to perform on its own independently. And its major cost is the charge that the post office levies for the use of its counters, of its physical infrastructure. That's the major cost, and obviously the major benefit from the post office, it actually gets that income from the bank, and that is paid monthly in cash by the bank to the post office. And I think that model we will obviously try and continue, even after corporatization, to make sure that both entities remain profitable on that basis.
Honourable Chair, honourable members, in respect of the Courier and Freight Group, if I may answer that question. The recession, the timing of the recession was regrettable in respect of the operations of CFG. Had it not been for the recession, we are confident that the group would have shown a profit in the last financial year. The logistics industry has been badly hit by the recession. I think the company has shown resilience in a very difficult market compared to its peers, where significant companies have gone under and have required extensive recapitalization, both of which has not applied to the Courier and Freight Group. In respect of the way forward, we remain confident that CFG is a viable business and has a key role to play in the comprehensive range of services and offerings that we as a group bring to the country. And our intention in terms of providing end-to-end services, as per Honourable Member's question, is in relation to what our customers are demanding. In the industry, customers are demanding a one-stop logistics solution, and we intend to provide that as per our customer needs. Thank you.
Nikki?
Honourable Members, I'll respond to the issue on financial services as to where it fits in with regards to Postbank. Broadly speaking, there are a number of things that sit in the concept paper, the white paper, and the current deal that our shareholder is going to be tabling, things that will sit under the bank specifically. And these include all the products that are currently provided by the bank, which are savings products, investment products, and transactor products. Transactor would be your card product. Beyond that, we also have money transfer products, which are both domestic and international products, where you can send money from one post office to the other, or you can also send within the country and outside the country. The other third component that sits inside the bank in terms of what was agreed in the Memorandum of Understanding is third-party payments. The bulk of the third-party payments actually, interestingly, come from your municipalities, where people can pay for their rates and taxes in the post office. So that's the core of what, in terms of what we've agreed with the shareholder based on the Memorandum of Understanding, will sit inside the bank. There's other things that we do as a bank that link, as the post office, that are broadly financial services. Currently, we have a situation where the post office has its own insurance, but that's only in relation to postal services. We believe there's huge opportunities for us to provide insurance even for banked customers, which we currently are not enabled and allowed to do, and through the changing in the different bills will be able to do to provide cost-effective and products that our customers on the banking side will definitely require. There's other areas that we also focus on which form part of financial services, and that would be the database management system that we're looking at providing for government in terms of social grant beneficiaries, because currently that system is owned by the private sector and is not owned by government. The other issues are your motor vehicle licensing, which we do for a number of provinces, where you can pay for your license inside the post office. So those are the issues, broadly speaking, that sit under financial services. And there's huge opportunities. And with the shareholder assisting us with the enabling legislation, we can be able to look at all the other things that we need to do in terms of the bank and financial services broadly.
Honourable Chair and members, I would like to address the issue of transport integration. I think one of the two main elements of logistics that lie within the post office are its property network and its transport network. Remember that every single letter that moves anywhere in the country has to go do so, either by air or by road. Now, one of the major elements of that infrastructure is that it is not necessarily fully utilized everywhere in the country. Now, the whole idea is that take that and leverage off that infrastructure and make it a sellable product so it can be shared by all users across the spectrum, whether they're in private or government sector, so that you can then increase efficiencies. Now, the issue of transport integration is basically that take the transport and ensure that it is being sold to anyone who requires it so that you can increase efficiency. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Hanover.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to congratulate the CEO and the Chairperson of the Board on this report we received today. But you said you are the Sapoans, and being the Sapoans, you must have a national anthem. Can you sing it to us? but you must try and develop a national anthem for the Sapoans, okay? And are you even related to the Samoans or whatever? and then, you know, over the years, a lot of things changed, Mr. Chairperson. But one thing that stays the same since I was a little boy was the postman. And please upgrade the bicycles because there's no gears and they're still going along with the same old bicycles with no gears and everything. Just in a lighter note, this is one of the things that doesn't change over all the years, I think, in all the countries in the world. Mr. Postman is always there and so on. Then a question about the post boxes. You know, a couple of years, the private post boxes, a couple of years ago, you know, the post office encouraged people for, you know, for safety reasons and et cetera, to get a private post box. But the prices are rising every year, and there's a lot of concern among consumers, especially in the community where I stay. There's a lot of old people and so forth, and they it's hard for them to make to meet ends and so on. I'm just asking a question about that. Then it will be interesting to know how many employees the Sapoans has got. This is one question, and you know, a couple of years ago, there was a lot of stories of mail theft, and you know, a lot of people turned their back onto the post office and they went to private courier services and so forth. Can you give us figures on the mail theft, and if the people have got more trust in the post office nowadays as it was a couple of years ago? I'm not sucking this out of my thumb, but you know it was true. Then another thing, I was working before the elections in Randfontein, and there's a you know, in terms of the old apartheid, you know, it's the old brown township, if you can call it, and that post office was burned down a couple of years ago. And the people staying in Tikkums, this is quite a big, you know it, Mr. Chairperson. And they have got to go all the way, rich people, wealthy people staying there. They've got problems with transport. And they asked me that I must approach the post office. If you can do something, it's burned down, there's no postal services in Tikkums, and they have to go all the way to Randfontein to do their business. If you can just look into that question, I will be very, very glad. We spoke a lot about the personnel. Now, the post office in my community is Amtsfreer. And, you know, when I'm standing in the queue to pay, for instance, my telephone bill or whatever, the people are also always moaning about the lack of personnel. Because I have to stand there for hours, and there's a lot of old people, as I said in the beginning. And even the postmaster, Lommy, I don't know what his real name, I just know him as Lommy, always talk to me about problem about personnel. Okay, that is one thing. And have you got a plan? What is the post office going to do with the old Rissing Street post office? You know, it's a nationale gedenkwaardigheid. What do you call it? Yeah, and the national heritage and everything. So what's the plan there? And, regarding the banking service, I think it's unfair competition with all the other commercial banks in South Africa. The post office is receiving money from the state. They're also paying taxes and everything. But isn't it, I'm just asking, is it unfair competition because of the fact you try to corporize the post bank further? And then, are you renting a lot of your offices, or do you own the buildings? Just a question about that. And you're going to plant trees. Why only 3 years? Because you've used up about 70 years trees already. So just in a lighter note. Thank you, Chairperson.
I'm limited to 3 questions per person now, because we've still got another presentation. All right, Velma?
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. And thanks for this excellent presentation. My question is relating to e-postal. What does it mean, the e-postal? How will that bring in revenue? And yes, there was a decline by the mail, like you've told us, by the volumes, and more of us are using email. And before we are sending email, real mail, but we are sending mail. But what process are you going to take forth to transform that, and to make sure that there's more mail that's going to be used? So people that do not have computers will not be using emails, but what are you going to put in place to make sure that these postal services are more accessible to people? But maybe you've mentioned, maybe I haven't catched that, but this committee I've been part of this committee of 1994 till 2000, But what are the terminals that they wanted to put into the post offices? Was that only a pilot? And I'm just asking, was that being done in the cities where they go into the internet cafes? And what are happening to rural areas? Are that then accessible, your internet services? And these terminals, are they accessible in the rural areas as well? And then 1883, what does that mean? One of your achievements? IT83. SARS. What does that mean? And then you mentioned SAFA. What is your working relationship with them? If you can just maybe explain that in detail to me, please. Thanks.
All right, members, there's tea and coffee outside. We're not going to break. So if you want to, please help yourself. Just go out quietly, get your things, and come back. Can we get responses? Short responses, please.
Are there any Chinese today?
Please, before the Chinese come, just get your tea. You know what has happened is 2 weeks ago we had our tea and coffee outside, and then a group of Chinese generals came, and they swiped. They swiped everything. And when the staff approached them to say, it's not for you, they said, we don't know anything. Please. They pretended that they didn't understand English. Kinder. So please, when one member stand guard there, shall I call you in, please? In fact, we put out an alert here. All the cops in this precinct know that if they see a Chinese journalist, arrest the person immediately. Put him in the holding cells. until the end of day. All right, so please help yourself. Can we get short responses because we are now struggling with time?
Thank you, Chair. We'll try and be short. Bicycles noted. It is an ongoing program. I noted, Honourable Member. Also, we note the two conference and the other thing. All the post office is not our building. It is where we were housed. It is the Joburg Metro building. But I think after the fire, because of its heritage site, I think as a post office we are quite hurt. But I think it's one of the issues that we'd like to look at and see if we can get into a collaboration with Joburg Metro in terms of how it can be preserved. I think it's a fair issue. Unfair competition, no. We do measure our post bank, in fact the post office as a whole, when we talk about our operating profit, we ensure that when we run the business, the issue of subsidization comes below our operating profit to be able to do that. But also I'm saying in terms of unfair competition, as we look at our post bank, we have in fact decided to target and make sure that the issue of affordability is in fact entailed within our strategy of making sure that we can deal with it from that perspective. We'd like to believe as a post office that it is not unfair competition, but it's an issue that we can have a discussion on. We rent most of our post offices and own some, but basically most of our mail centers we do own, and I think the CEO can give us some numbers in terms of the rent office space that we do get. On the private banks and post office employees, I do not have the number, Honourable Member, but we can give that. However, I do know that our group executive mail business has driven and, in fact, ensured that we have in our head office boxes for all of us to take, and there's a drive to ensure that all of us own a box that we pay for within there, and I'm the first victim for him in order to make sure that we do that. Even don't take the one that you have, buy another one so that you have two. On the e-postal, just to quickly explain that, the e-postal business basically means one thing. You can send your mail through the post office electronically. That is, if you look at a bank when they have most of their mail electronically, they give us an electronic file. We then print, inspect in the post office, and we can send to the nearest print site, to the nearest distribution center, so that it reduces our cost, but also it enables our customers to can send their mail much later than before. Let me give an example. If you are going to mail a statement for people to pay, you need to mail it maybe the second week of the month. With the electronic, the e-postal, we then are given as a customer, a major retailer, a bank, another few days a week to be able to print, and therefore making your collection time a little bit longer for you to be able to do. Those are the benefits that we have. But not only do we print it, insert it, we also offer within that the alternatives on the output, which is a printed statement, an email statement, an SMS, or an email to fax statement. Those are the alternatives that we offer with this e-postal. So it's not just electronic to print. It's electronic to all the technology that we have, and that allows us to be able to do so. It may not grow the normal print business, but it allows us to diversify and bring new revenue streams into the post office that we do that. So that's where we're looking at. The PITs, which is our public internet terminals, where we make the e-services accessible, is a program that we have. We currently have 700 of those. However, we are reviewing the model of the PITs to be able to allow a little bit more flexibility and accessibility for people. When I mentioned the SANS 1883, this is my mind blocked. The addressing national standards, the South African addressing national standards as by the South African Bureau of Services. The number is the number that is allocated to the addressing national standards. That is there. So that it's called FANS 1883. And that's what the addressing format goes through. So you go through those iterations for us to make sure that it dealt with. Issues of personnel, we have, as I indicated earlier on, reviewed our model, and we are going through a process of filling in posts for all our areas that is looked at. In this particular year, as we're sitting in this year, just to get the right number, Honourable Member, I think we have looked at, in this particular, in this year containing going 24 months, we have employed 947 people, primarily looking at our consumer services, which is our retail outlets, to make sure that not only do we have the branch managers who meet the requirements but are trained to do that, but also to ensure that we get to the numbers that the chairperson had indicated on, that we move from the 45 to the 70-30 and increase it. Because of compliance issues, especially in our retail outlets, we need to be able to get people who will be compliant with the Financial Services Act and all the other things that we deal with. So we are going through all the issues that we do. And I think, Chairperson, that's as short as I can be. SASA, I have an indication about SASA.
About two years ago, there was a memorandum of understanding that was signed by the two ministers, the Minister of Communication and the Minister of Social Development, in terms of how we can enable government hold and take responsibility for information that currently is on beneficiaries, because the database currently sits with the private sector, it's not with government. That was one portion. And the second portion was in line with the strategy of government of enabling people to be able to get paid anytime, anywhere, all the time, is to bank the beneficiaries, particularly for those that can be able to access, because then it therefore means that you can go to an ATM, you can go to a shop and use your card. So those are the two programs. At the beginning of the year, we started a program whereby we're taking a new beneficiaries that are staying in peri-urban areas and ensuring that as they apply for grants, as long as they don't have bank accounts, we would allocate them bank accounts and they would actually automatically be banked. And over since the beginning of January, we've actually registered over 400,000 beneficiaries that are not getting paid under trees, but that are actually already banked as they get approved through the SASA process. It's going to be a long process that we continue to work with government in terms of how can we ensure that we fast-track that process. It's a work in progress.
All right. We've got three hands, Langa and Mastroli and Insiki. It'll be the last.
That's Chair. Mr. Coban is complaining to me. Thanks very much, Chair. In your presentation, you said you are in the process of reviewing the staff model. Can you elaborate and expatiate and assist us to understand what you mean and what it entails? Because you don't want a situation in future where there's problem and said, no, we inform the committee that will review the staff model and things like that. Are you using labor brokers in getting your staff? What is the impact of this review of staff model to the number of temporal staff? Because they are keep on growing. And also, do we have any program like an outreach program where you go to community and advise the community in terms of the services that are there in the post office and things like that? Lastly, how many South African customers that use or utilize post office rather than including the customers outside the borders of South Africa, to be specific in South Africa? Because in your presentation you said you've got 66.9 customers. And I know in South Africa we have almost 48 million. So thanks very much.
Thank you, Chairperson. And thanks to the Post Office, there's a great improvement in their reports. I thought if there were, I was blindfolded, I wouldn't know that it's the same people that I always think that it's me. Yeah. On your last slide, CEO, I just want to know about this the postal addressing system. How does it affect you people when you deal with the quarter camps? You know the name squatter is supposed to be people who are on transit, but you know they reside there until, you know, they form part of the area, and they demand that they be served in many ways. Now, I wanted to know how do you deal with this? And I see on your operational reach here, the Northern Cape, this map that you have got. It's so scanty. And I would ask the same question that was asked by my colleague here. Do you do any outreach there? And what is the reason for it, for being so scanty like this, I suppose? So distant apart each other. Thank you.
Ngiyabonga mina engifuna nje ukuthi ipost office bake bangixazulele kona ukuthi umama laphayana uyasho ukuthi ke i-volume ye-mail iyehla, and njengoba i-volume ye-mail isihla mgcinisihlalo, I don't know whether the width. Would you want me to hire you for translation? But you say, you know, without, you know, say, how do
you speak in the language that you're speaking, Mr. Bjergi is going to translate.
Say, how do we address, I mean, the post office, how do you address the issue of a declining email volume without cross-subsidizing the other activities of SAP, because you can use funds from logistics to business, or you can fund. I mean, no. Let me leave it like that.
That's one too. Me too, Chair. You think, mine is just two issues. But I must start by appreciating. You know, at one point you raised the issue of the housing of the post office. I've seen in the part which I'm living at that now they are moving from out of supermarkets back to their buildings. So I could not understand why you leave your building to a supermarket and then end up selling the same product to the same supermarket, duplicating, except that there's a demarcation post office, but the products are the same and so on. So I appreciate that because I've seen Barberton Post Office being renovated. You might be moving back. So if that can be fast-tracked, that process. But no, it's not Benny. We're not banning post offices. Even those who are banning, they are just banning other things, not post offices. It's not known that it's under government, is it? the issue which I want to raise, there is this campaign which I think we have taken up to encourage people to renew their postal, I don't know your terminology. But You see, I was been saying to my colleagues it's a good campaign, which I also comply with, but the problem is that you only reduce it by 2 rand. I don't understand. To encourage people to pay before the end of December by only 2 rand as an encouragement. Maybe 2 rand is something big somewhere, but I just don't understand that campaign.
£2 is a lot of money.
But my chip is with £2. No, it's fine. But I'm saying it's a good campaign all over, except that I've been battling with the £2 reduction and so on. No, not £10, £2. But the other issue, Chair, which I just wanted to check, I'm not sure when I was outside whether it's been asked, is that here in Parliament, I'm not sure whether it's because the post office in Parliament. The people there, they are ever changing. They are changing like nobody's business. I'm not sure whether it's here in Parliament or my interns or labor brokerage that new people have been given and so on. I don't understand. They're just changing like nobody's business. New people after, whether it's a security matter and other things, I'm not sure. But sometimes it's got its own impact in terms of the service and the other things. I might not know what is the decision around that. But I must say, Chair, the issue which I wanted to raise, which partly has been responded to, is the issue of you promised to Sanang centers that you are going to build them. I was interested to get a report around that. How far are you doing that? Because my contention, Chair, is that when you go to Nelspruit, where the upmarket is, and go to that post office, and then you go to Masood post office. These are two different post offices. If you can say it's one company, you'll be lying, because you see the one at Stelter in Nelspruit. Oh God, that thing is spacious and very beautiful, and the layout and so on. Then you go to the one in Masood. People are still working behind the, like, you know, the old buses where the driver was locked in terms of those things. I'm a butler and so on. So people are still working in butlers. It's like sort of a mini prison and something like that. So I just don't know. But I'm saying the 2001 which we're coming with, it was more beautiful and consumer friendly and so on. But this one of butlers, it's a problem. I know my story saying maybe it was about cheese I was at the township and so on. But I'm just saying, your 2001 service center, how far are you with that problem? Because you promised around 100 at one point that you'll be able to build that number and so on. But how far are you? Whether you have, you normally exceed your target, whether you have also exceeded on that particular target. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Member, just for the time issue. Let me start with the 2001 census. In terms of our plan, Honourable Member, we did come and indicate that we had committed to build 3 2001 centres. And in terms of how we look at our post offices, we'd like to be able to partner and, in fact, do them within the 2001 concept. We are currently in progress and in discussion with GCIS on the 2001 issues, and without wanting to disadvantage myself, we will be presenting to the board on the 26th some issues around the 2001 centres, which is coming in the end of the month. So, Honourable Member, if we allow, out of that, we will go through. But basically, the issues are, as you know, the 2001 centres are, in fact, a collaboration between us and government in terms of how we want to be able to build the centres. And what has happened is that in terms of the requirements that we have found, is we need to review and submit back through our governance processes some of those issues, and we will, after that, be updating on the 2001 centres. The issues of people changing all the time, it will probably also deal with the issues of the staff model. We lose almost about 1,000, approximately 1,000 people per year, and that comes through either issues of people demise, issues of dismissals, issues of people retiring and people resigning in general in the post office. And I think our number for last year was about 1,400. And that requires replacement. of people in terms of what we need to do. So you'll find that the highly mobile people and people who, in fact, we lose quite a lot would be mostly in those areas that Honourable Member is referring to within the consumer services area, and that is where it is most visible. And hence the issue around training becomes a major issue, because you may train a person and the person leaves to go somewhere else, or and you then go through and deal with it. Now, when you talk about the review of the staffing model as a whole, the review of the staffing model says we need to be able to say, out of our new business model, how are we going to capacitate the organization for those particular businesses with the particular competences requirements for each business in order for us to be able to deal with it? It is a model that has started, we started it right from the definition of the business model. We are now, we've just done the process mapping that I just indicated earlier on that we are sending an award for, in outlining processes in the post office as a whole. The reason for that is that the job content should then come out of exactly the process that you are responsible for. So we have gone through all the levels within the organization to be able to get to a point where we want to finalize. The program is expected to finalize on 2010. So the review of the staffing model is not only about the number, it is about the job, it is around the competencies, it's around the profile, it is also around the grading of each and every job as we go through. That will come up with a full organizational structure, a full human resource profile, so that when it comes to honorable members to say the post office now and in the future will require a base of people that is 20,000, we know exactly where and how are they going to be. And that is the review of the business model as a whole. And that's the outcome that we need to be able to give out. We have now finalized the five levels that we have gone through and we still have to go through and make sure that we do. But also included in here is how is the organization being flattened? You know, rather than have all these different levels, how do you flatten it to make it much more effective? But we are doing it in such a way that it is documented, it meets our ISO processes, and it goes through and it can be put into the archives and for people to be able to see. So that's the issue around the staff model. Around labor brokers, we currently do, yes, employ labor brokers within the organization. And for that, there is, in terms of our business, it is seasonal in nature. It has its peaks, it has its drops, and we are guided by that. But secondly, I think there is another issue that we need to be able to indicate that within our staffing and within how we put in, we have issues that we need to be able to look at. Statutory requirements, in terms of how do we ensure that those statutory requirements are met, in terms of, for me as a person, I would need to be able to take, according to law, 15 days a year of my leave to be able to go through, and we have gotten into other agreements with labor for extra leave days that we need to do, that we need to put into them, into the organization, for our training programs and all other programs that we have within our organization. But also as we go through, we then look at the issues of flexible labor to say how do we deal with it from that perspective. So as we said, yes, we do employ labor brokers. However, as I indicated earlier on, is that we have been mindful of all the developments that have been happening within that arena. And as an organization, and I think the chair also indicated, that we've taken a very serious look at that, and we are going through and reviewing that process as we sit here. Engagement with labor, engagement with the labor brokers, but also looking at the conditions that people are working with within the organization for us to be able to take it through. As a business, one of the things that we do understand and really recognize is that the seasonality and the peak volumes are going to require us to be able to have flexible labor to be able to meet the business demands as we go through. So I think the CEO might add at some point that we want to be able to go through. Customers, when we talk about 66.9 million customers, when a person comes into the post office, there's a record out that we do in terms of our transactions, in terms of that. So 66.9 million customers does not represent residents within South Africa or people. It says, I may have come to the post office several times, and I think it's a good indicator, because if you take the kids out, it means quite a number of people still come to the post office to deal with the post office from that perspective. So that is what it means. And the customers that you're talking about are not differentiated whether they are South Africans, but they are people who come and use the issues. In the outside operations, in terms of the collaborations we may have with other people, it will be the issue. There will be those post office customers, and they would then make business with us. So the numbers are the people who come into South Africa every day into the South African post office to deal with. The executive of Mail will deal with the postal addressing, because it is then. May I just deal with the issue that the honourable member raised in terms of the mail volumes declines and whether any cross subsidisation is happening? In our mail business, which has indicated still from 61% of our business, almost 80% of our business is in fact business to consumer. It's business that sends mail to people, individuals. So if you look at between 80 and 90%, it's mostly business to consumer. Consumer to consumer, me writing to somebody else, is a very small part of our business. And that's the one that would have been impacted on by emails, SMSs, Christmas cards, as we come into Christmas, that people might in fact send more Christmas cards to increase our volumes, has been impacted very, very negatively. But I go back to the history of the post office when I talk about this to say consumer to consumer, in fact, has been under technological advances, starting from the fax to the telefax to all other things to where we are sitting in terms of that. So that part, yes, it gets impacted. Now, how are we going to respond to that as a post office? Our introduction of the first one, which is the e-postal, that we've done from business to consumer, that we've introduced, is an area that we've looked at. But within that e-postal solution, there is an opportunity that as you sit in your email, you can in fact choose whether to write that and send it to the post office and choose how you want it to be delivered. And that's one of the extension of that service that we'll be offering going forward. In issues of cross-subsidization, the CFO will deal with that. Honorable Member, two rents that we are offering as an issue out of a box that you pay 240 rents to use for 365 days a year means you are in fact paying less than a rent a day for that box that you service daily. So in quantum, it looks very small. But I just try for, on a lighter note, Honorable Member, I'll just ask the other members to help me with all other questions that are remaining.
I can just answer the question on the cross potential cross subsidization, which is a good question, and it's something that we treat very sensitively, and we put a lot of controls in place to make sure that does not happen. All projects in the organization have to be justified on their own return on investment. So there's no subsidy that's factored into any of the projects or capital investments that we do. All divisional performance is measured at a trading profit level. So it's the performance of that particular division. The subsidy actually comes in below the trading profit line at a corporate level. So that's another control. We also agree annually with the Department of Communications when we get our tranche of subsidy, if it's voted to us. We sit down with the Department of Communications and say, these are the projects that we're going to be embarking on this year. And we get that blessing. So there's that oversight as well from the department that there's no use of subsidy for any anti-competitive behavior at all. Thank you.
Honourable Member, if I can really clarify the question on flexible labour. We have 16,500 staff in the post office. 70% of them are in operations. Over the last reporting period, approximately 2.8 million hours were lost to sick leave, to maternity leave and to exits. If you take that on a full-time equivalent, it translates into 3,500 people. Because people don't get sick and take leave on a predictable basis, our ability to flex necessarily means that the number of flexible staff we have at a point in time differs. So at the end of the year, they are higher than in the middle of the year. But if you look at the requirement just in terms of our operating needs, excluding training, it probably relates to, probably translates to approximately 22%. If you then include training and other issues, you probably get closer to the model that we are targeting, which is 70-30.
Honourable Member, I think as far as the postal addressing system is concerned, we have embarked on projects to address all urban, rural, as well as informal settlements. There is, however, a challenge with the informal settlements. We have rolled out addresses, and we are providing also the same system that we are using in the rural areas of providing geocoding. But the unfortunate part is we have to get cooperation also from the local government in terms of promulgation of these informal settlements. Because we have picked up that in most of the informal settlements where we have rolled out addresses and provided the geocoding, half of that community has moved. And now the sequencing of address gets, muddied up. So, but it's a program that we are busy with. But the issue of promulgation is one that needs to be addressed firstly before we can be able to provide this effectively and efficiently. Thank you.
Yeah, just lastly, on the Northern Cape, why it is so sparkling within the population issues, because our target is around 1 to 10, 14,000 inhabitants that we have. And in terms of that, what we have 112 post offices within the Northern Cape. In if you look at the Northern Cape, it is one province that, in fact, as a post office, we have over-catered for the population that is there. But because the Northern Cape, by its nature, is sparsely populated, it is over-catered because it is the 1 to 14,000, but also a kilometer range that we need to take into consideration. And hence, you'll see in the map, it looking very sparsely because of just the population and the demographics within the Northern Cape.
Thanks. Honorable Chair, in conclusion, I just want to highlight some of the areas. On the community outreach program,
The outreach program that I think we haven't answered that question on the outreach program. In terms of what we do for our extension of services within the communities, if you look at our addresses, when you go into the rural areas, that just before you can even think about putting a post office or an address in an area, you go through the local areas, either the metros and the local structures, to be able to go through that. But what we haven't quite synthesized and finalized is whether it is an outreach program, not just for the inception of the services, but as a continuous program that we'll do for educating people and making sure that people are aware of our programs and services. For that, in this particular year, we have decided to start looking at the issues of use of the community radio stations, in particular, to look at products and services of the post office and to also bring awareness through our processes that we can be able to go through. And Honourable Member, I think it's one of the gaps that, as you have raised it, we are identifying, and we will come back to you on that issue.
Just on that, we also use Izimbizo with the Minister of Communication. So whenever they are having Izimbizo, we piggyback on that and have other consultations. Just in conclusion, I would just like to highlight that the monopoly that we have at the post office is post office a diverse business. And we have logistics, we've got the mail, we've got the post bank. And if we look at the monopoly, we're talking about kilogram?
Anything below 1 kilogram.
So I'm looking at the ICASA councillor here. So the vast of our business
is operating in a competitive space. So whatever we do is actually, everything above the 1 kilogram is not protected. We are just operating in a free space, in a free market, if you would call it that. And that has implications. And I think the second issue to highlight around that is that we actually, I mean, the subsidy is very specific, as was highlighted by the CFO. And the results that we present actually are results in terms of our business, which the subsidy we present to show where the subsidy is being used. So the cross-subsidization issue is not an issue as we deal with this. And also, thirdly, in conclusion, I would like to highlight that when we talk about flexible labor models that we would like to present, which we are working on to Parliament next year early, we are not, labor broker is not equal to flexible model. So when we're talking about, there were always temporaries in post office before there was the labor broker model. So basically what we're talking about is a model that is working in that sense. And the area of labor brokers is a big concern for us as well as an organization. And we've engaged with them directly. And the management knows very clearly from a board perspective, we are at a point where we say we are not releasing increases of the staff under labor brokers until we know it's going directly to those people. So it's a concern that we have, and we've put measures to deal with it because we are operating under legal contracts. You can't be reckless under that. You have to operate in terms of that. And those are some of the issues that we've discussed also, I mean, with the union. So it's very clear for us when you're talking about a flexible labor model, we are talking in terms of how do we work with something that is just and fair and also creates performance, because we've had issues around that, which we've communicated also to them. But on the crime issue, which was not handled, I also want to emphasize that our focus on the labor internally and the measures that we've put in have actually worked for us. The internal theft has reduced. We've seen by around 19%. But what is interesting, which we always have to check, the theft which is sort of externally driven, I would put it that, I can't find the right word, in terms of, I mean, armed robberies, hijacking, you know, which is not in terms of internal stuff. It could be collusion, but to a greater extent is out there, is where we have seen increase. So the internal is reducing, which we're comfortable with the measures we're putting in, but the externally driven, in terms of hijacking, cash in transit, is where we're seeing increases. And we also have to understand that the context of that the post office being diverse as it is, I mean, we're seeing in retail, I mean, statistics that were just released recently from the Center of Retail Research globally shows that South Africa is one of the 5 top countries in the world in terms of theft in retail. And we have a retail angle from our side. Similarly, I mean, from a banking perspective, the disadvantage we have as a post bank or as a post office broadly, is that we are a parastatal. As a parastatal, we have to report and record everything for the public to see. Our competitors are not obliged to. We see robberies in banks every day in banks. No, you don't see that in the papers every day. But from our side, because we are committed to accountability and also being part of the parastatal, we shout about every bad thing that happens, because we want the public to understand where we're coming from. So generally, the environment of crime is a big issue for us, and it is affecting us. But fortunately, we are working very closely with staff, and they've done quite a lot to assist us with the syndicates and everything. And as we sit here, we're seeing reduction, but we are also taking other measures in terms of that. Lastly, as we deal with the next presentation of the post-bank bill, we would like the honorable members to appreciate that a lot of what we have done and the profits we make are reinvested in people. And it becomes very important to understand that the decisions and how quick they are made have impact on us, because in the post-bank that we're talking about, we are investing billions to try and make sure that the post bank is up to speed for it to be the bank for the people. So it becomes important for us to make sure that in supporting this process, we appreciate the decisions behind and also in terms of the speed within which we manage these processes for us to be able to compete, because the Post Bank operates in a competitive space. And it is the product, Honorable Member, that was asking about, you know, competition and cross-up there. Our product, when we get those savings and that increase in the Post Bank, it is amazing to show how much of the old book. So how what's the percentage?
Of the 3.2 billion that we had at the end of the financial year, 60% is in the book.
So the old post office book, so it is our product and our approach that ensures that the services that we provide give us an edge. So it is not just about being the parastatal, it is about us being the smart people that we have tried to be. So from that perspective, Honorable Chair, I would like to close by thanking the members for the end of the year and give a Christmas gift on behalf of the Post Office to all the Honorable Members here today, which will be the Presidential Stamp Launch that was launched on the 10th of November 2009 from the Post. So I'll hand one to you and the others will be handed to the Honorable Members. Thank you so much for the opportunity.
Presentation where I heard that they are supporting the shoot to kill.
Who is me, Africa? It will be. Yes. No, absolutely. Members, there's a few housekeeping things while we're getting everybody settled. One is that I think the Tembi has sent out this note. It's come from the DG, indicating that the performance management system for ICASA counselors, our resolution says that such contracts should be signed by the end of this month. But they have indicated that in terms of what is required and the details of the contract, and the advice they're getting from specialists in this area, it will not be possible, and they're asking for us to consider a deadline of the 15th of January next year, so that it's properly done and the contracts are carefully thought out, and that it is also negotiated with each counselor, because you want to enter into a one-to-one arrangement, and they will not manage. So if we are comfortable with that, that we will accept. The DG is here. Did you see this letter that was sent out? Oh, all right. So let me do this. We'll make copies now so that you have that. Then two, the minister has been kind enough to invite members of this committee to a national broadband policy colloquium. It's scheduled to start tomorrow and go on to Thursday. That's taking place at Gallagher Estate for people that might be interested. He said it's open to all members of the committee if anybody is interested. It starts tomorrow at 9 o'clock. Thirdly, Namisa has sent us a letter. I don't know if you've seen this. Okay, this came in this morning. If you remember, when they were presenting before us, there was a document with a lot of allegations by one staff member. And what they are saying is that they have prepared a response, but they would want to come to Parliament in February next year to formally take each one of those and to respond to them in public, because this letter was circulated in public and they wanted an opportunity to respond publicly. So I thought I'd just place it on the record so people are aware of that. Lastly, there is a suggestion that those who want to go to ISA tomorrow, because this is a committee week, and if members are in Cape Town and have time, we're quite willing to arrange for those members who want to go to ISA, that's in Gqeberha. But the only condition is that we must have a good number of members. If it's just one, two, then it's not going to be a practical thing. So I think Tembi did phone people on Monday, and provisionally we've got about five people. So if by the end of today you can really confirm that you will be going, If we are five, I think we can arrange for people to go to. If we are not going to be five, then I think we should rather cancel it and reschedule it sometime next year. So can I just get some comments on that, on the issue of the trip, because it has a bearing on applications and those kinds of things. Master Lee?
I would immediately want to respond on the HRC. I thought the Secretary has communicated with us, and partly the reason why we are here, because we got the information about this meeting after we had been phoned for ISA. We are here because we agreed to go to ISA, and we are under the impression that the committee is going there. I never knew that it's an optional thing. Otherwise, I could have stayed in Johannesburg. You can imagine what it cost us, some of us.
Right. I was under the impression that people knew about this meeting last week already. The notices were sent out last week. So this was on our program to have this meeting with the post office and the postman. It's been on the program for quite some time. So it might be that some members did not receive the notice. Yesterday's SMS was just a reminder. The ISA thing was only really came up very late, because the committee section wanted to know if there's any trip that the committee is undertaking still this year. And we said if people are available, then we can go to ISA. But what we've now discovered is quite a few members of the opposition are not available. That's the one difficulty. We've had a lot of apologies. And then also there's this broadband conference, which I thought some members might want to go to, because it's an important issue. And therefore it's provisional. We haven't made a decision. But if I hear you correctly, Masori, your suggestion is that we should rather go as a committee. And if that's the case, then we're really looking at it next year. We will not be able to do it this year. That's fine. I think that's okay if members are happy with that. So we will cancel tomorrow then. No, not what you're saying, okay? I accept the criticism, so that we will not be going tomorrow. I take that as a point. We will then try and organize this sometime next year. But Tim is saying he has made every effort to call you.
I usually find out the
Okay. It's
just if it goes on too long, I can't stay.
All right, fine. Let's accept that we are not going tomorrow.
Tell them that over the weekend is that the same story.
All right, so it's fine. We'll rearrange the CSA thing sometime next year. All right. Gigi, those were just a few housekeeping arrangements that we needed to get through. Sorry to keep you waiting. Welcome to you and the team. You'll introduce some of the members. We don't know all of them. And it's over to you now.
Chairperson, honorable members, good morning. I think we were here last 2 weeks ago. We seem to be here quite before the committee quite often. But I suppose it lends credence to the fact that we want to obviously improve interaction with the committee, and obviously for the committee to understand our line of work and the issues that we deal with on a day-to-day basis. Okay, firstly, I'd like to introduce our team. The people we have here before you today, Mamukiti Mohlala is myself. I'm the Director General in the department. I'm ably assisted by Gift Patelezi, who is the Acting Director Deputy Director General, ICT Policy Development. Next to the left of him is a lady by the name of Dimakaza Mojela. She is the Deputy Director of Postal and Policy Development. Sitting behind me is Mantikeleng Munama. She's the director in my office. And next to her is Mlindi Hamedi, and he's the Acting Chief Director in the DG's office. Before I go into a discussion on the post-bank bill, I think it's important for me to just highlight to members that this is the first of four bills that will be presented to this committee in this quarter. The post-bank bill is the first one that's been approved by Cabinet. We still also have the SAPO bill, which obviously should be read in conjunction with the post-bank bill. Then we are going to be proposing amendments to the Electronic Communications Act and the ICASA Act. All four pieces of legislation will be introduced during the course of this financial year, but we assume that depending on the legislative calendar and the timelines, that will then determine when they will be put before the committee and what debates will be made with respect to those four pieces of legislation. So that is the sequence of issue, of the legislative calendar from the department's point of view. And you will note that these are issues that the minister raised in his budget speech, that these were the issues that would be considered and would be put in the legislative calendar for this financial year. So we are still very optimistic and intend on putting all four pieces of legislation before the National Assembly and then by implication before this committee for discussion with proposed amendments. Now, specifically on the issue of the post-tax bill, the sequence of our presentation will firstly deal with the introduction, we'll deal with background issues, we'll deal with the issue of strategic focus, and then we will summarily deal with some of the provisions in the Act. We assume that you, all members have been provided with a copy of both the presentation and the Act, the proposed bill. My apologies, it's not an Act yet, but the proposed bill with all the specific provisions. We'll talk to the bill chapter by chapter so that it is easy for one to follow what proposed provisions are being put forth to this committee for consideration. On issues of introduction and background, I will deal with those. The issues of the provisions on the chapters of the bill, those will be dealt with by the DDG, who is the acting DDG, namely Jeffrey Pelezi, and then we'll request Dimakata to then deal with the section on general and miscellaneous issues and the conclusion, which is chapters 10 and 11. And then the rest of the team will deal with all the questions that may emanate from members with regard to the provisions of the specific bill. Now, by way of introduction, I think it's important to just emphasize that the Post Bank is a financial services division of post offices around the world. So South Africa is not unique in that particular regard. It is part of a model that is internationally accepted and utilized. The Post Bank, the bill aims to give mostly isolated communities access to vital financial services and related services, thereby contributing to economic and social development. SAPO has been offering financial services since its incorporation through money orders and postal order services. The Post Bank was established in 1958 and is under the control and management of the Post Office today. Currently, the Post Bank is regulated under the Postal Services Act and has been specifically exempted from application of the Banks Act provision, which imposes high entry and barrier and barriers to entry of capital, liquidity, and reserve requirements. This would have impeded the Post Office in meeting its government obligations of providing services to rural and unbanked populations. The Post Bank has been used as a deposit-taking and a savings division for South African Post Bank. Now, by way of background as to how we get to this bill that we're currently discussing now, in 1996 there was a white paper on the postal policy which laid out the framework for the restructuring of the Post Bank, which included the corporatization of the Post Bank as a subsidiary, which is only wholly owned by SAPO or government, with an ultimate aim of becoming a fully-fledged bank. In 2005, there was a memorandum of understanding that was entered into by the Minister of Communications and the Minister of Finance on the restructuring and the corporatization process for the Post Bank. The policy and the agreement, which is specifically in the MOU, spelled out the governing principles and the processes to be followed in the restructuring and corporatization of the Post Bank. Working committees were established comprising of a representative from the Department of Communications, the South African Post Office, Post Bank, the National Treasury and the Reserve Bank in order to come up with a clear framework on the finalization of the process going forward. The DOC was tasked with the responsibility of creating the legislative framework to facilitate the corporatization process. Hence, we come to the position that we're in right now, which is the Post Bank Bill that is being presented now for consideration and for discussion. The strategic focus with regard to the contents of this proposed bill is to allow for the establishment of a financial institution for mass mobilization of savings and investment from a broad for the broad community, particularly to communities that have little or no access to commercial banking services and facilities, by making available accessible payments and savings through the post offices and other outlets. This is also to provide for improved and expanded role of the post bank and to strengthen the savings propensity of the wide segments of the rural community. Most importantly, we believe that the corporatization of the post bank will ensure that the post bank is a delivery arm of government for rural banking services, and the legislative framework will facilitate government intervention in the postal financial sector in line with the developmental state. I will then at this point hand over to Acting DDG to take us through the summary of the provisions or the chapters of the bill, and to also go into the detail of which what each chapter provides, and then thereafter hand over to Dumakato to deal with the relevant sections. Thank you.
Chair, thank you, members, and thank you, DG. And thank you, CEO, and the chairperson of the post office, and also ICASA, councillor present here. Chapter 1 deals with the issues of interpretation and objects of the bill. Here, it provides the definition of the definition of words that they will be used in this part of the legislation, and for a better understanding and interpretation of such areas of definitions. And you look at the issue that relates to objects of the Sovereign Post Bank Bill in terms of 2009, which are to provide for the incorporation of the Post Bank Division of the Post Office into a public company wholly owned by the Post Office, with the aim of, one, conducting a business of the bank that will encourage and attract savings amongst the people of the Republic, that will inherently then address the issue of the culture of savings amongst the communities. Rendering transactional services and lending facilities through, amongst others, existing infrastructure of the post office, and for the company to develop into a bank of first choice. It will have probably a slogan that will, that says we bank whatever it takes to bank, because the post office says we deliver whatever it takes to deliver. Then chapter 2 of the bill talks about issues of incorporation and transfer of the business. It provides for the incorporation of the public company and for such company to be wholly owned subsidiary of the Sovereign Post Office. Mostly, it also empowers the minister to sign a memorandum and articles of association and all other necessary documents for the formation and incorporation of such a company. Further, make provision for the company to be registered as the bank in terms of the Banks Act of South Africa. Provides also for the transfer deposit business of the bank division to the company and empowers the post office to determine the extent of the business to be transferred to the company, with an auditor appointed or auditors appointed by the minister. Continuing with the incorporation and transfer of the business, it provides also for the transfer of personnel of the bank to the company, subject to Schedule 1 of the Act. It empowers also the minister, with the concurrence of the Minister of Finance, to determine the value of the business of the proposed bank for the purpose of finance or financial prescripts. It further empowers the minister to determine the date or dates for the transfer of the business of the post bank or to the company as gazetted by through the gazette. The powers and duties of the company are provided for in Chapter 3 of the bill. It provides for the powers of the company shall have to enable it to realize its objective as set in Section 2. It places the obligation of the company in the post office to conclude the agreement with the concurrence of the minister and the Minister of Finance, which will govern the cooperation between the company and the post office. The agreement to include, among others, terms and conditions relating to the utilization of the post office's infrastructure by the company, which I think they raised consistently, that they still utilize the infrastructure of the post office. In the near future, Duzu will be remaining somewhere, a separate entity, but a subsidiary of the post office. The control and management of the company. This is part chapter 4 of the
it provides for the establishment of the board that will control and manage the company. It empowers the minister to appoint members of the board with concurrence of the Minister of Finance and the Post Office, and further outlines the processes to be followed in appointing board members. It provides for further, it provides for the composition of the board and for the disqualification of any person to be appointed as a board member. It empowers the board to appoint committees necessary to assist in the realization of the company's objectives, to delegate any of its powers to such committees. It empowers, it further places an obligation on the board members to disclose any financial interest before and after appointment as a board member. Further prescribes on how to deal with the resignation, removal of from office of board members, and vacancies within the board. It empowers the board to appoint managing directors subject to the minister's approval for the MD to be the board member by virtue of his or her office. Chapter 5, funds and financial accounts of the company. This chapter provides for what will constitute the company's funds. The funds will include capital vested after separation, its operating activities, money as may be appropriated by Parliament, or any other fund lawfully received or raised. Further empowers the minister or any officer authorized to inspect financial accounts or documents of the company. It provides for the company to be subjected to the application of the PFMA, which is Public Finance Management Act. This part of the charter now deals with general and miscellaneous, which the Magazo will take over.
Thanks, DG. Honorable members, the chairperson, support executives, and ICASA councillors, good afternoon, and thank you for the opportunity to conclude on this presentation. This chapter, which deals with general and miscellaneous, deals with issues of general nature to ensure the proper implementation of this legislation and the processes that need to be followed in finalizing the process. This chapter empowers the minister with the concurrence of the Minister of Finance to develop regulations. And these regulations will assist in the realization of the objects that are set out in this proposed legislation, and for the board of this company that this legislation is proposed to be establishing to recommend to the minister to develop such regulations. It further provides for the provisions of the Companies Act that will not be applicable to this company that this legislation is proposing to form, and this, by so doing, the minister and the Minister of Trade Industry will then reach an agreement as far as which other provisions of the Companies Act will not be applicable to this company. As this company, it will only be formed after this legislation has been passed. So we are also providing for transitional arrangements wherein this company, the post bank division of the post office, will continue to operate without any interference until such time that a certificate to commence with business has been issued in terms of the Banks Act. So again, on general and miscellaneous, it's Schedule 1, which provides for the procedure to be followed in transferring the personnel of the post bank division of the post office into the post bank company that will be formed under this legislation, and Schedule 2, which provides for the laws that will be repealed by this proposed legislation, and to the extent to which those the legislation shall be repealed And one of the main legislations that will be repealed by this proposed legislation is the Postal Services Act of 1998. All the provisions that deal with the issues of the post bank will be repealed for them to be governed under this proposed legislation. And then we are also providing that under this schedule to say that the company that we are formulating under this legislation shall be called the South African Post Bank, and this legislation shall be called the South African Post Bank Act and shall come into effect in 2010. So, Honorable Chairperson, in conclusion, we are saying that as a department, we believe that the Post Bank has become extremely important in the realization of the integrated service delivery and ensure that ordinary people within our communities do participate in the economic activities of this country, irrespective of where they are living and their financial background. This is so because, Honorable Chairperson, that the post office has a footprint everywhere, even in the deepest rural communities, and they have been doing so. They have been providing the services to those rural communities. So we are saying they need to continue to provide those services, include the financial services, but under a new and expanded a company that will focus on providing financial services. So we are saying this legislative framework is therefore aimed at establishing a company that will develop into a bank of first choice, particularly to communities that have little or no access to commercial banking facilities. So, and we are saying that we want to ensure that the company complies with the critical financial service sector regulation and is supervised accordingly, and to ensure that the achievement of its intended objectives and the protection of depositors' funds. And as it has been indicated, Honorable Chairperson, that the National Treasury has also been involved in this process, and the South African Post Office and the Reserve Bank. So we believe that this process will really, this legislation will assist in finalizing that process of corporatizing the Post Bank to be a bank of first choice for the communities that have little or no access to commercial banking activities. Thank you, Chairperson. And the speech.
I think, Chairperson, this in a nutshell lays out what are the proposals with regard to the Post Bank Act, and we will obviously get guidance from the committee as to how obviously the process will go forward from here on. Obviously, we are willing to take initial questions and discussion on the bill, but we do expect that there will still be more of an intricate process going forward where we'll have consultation with our wider audience. But those are the specific proposals, and we are willing to take questions with regard to what we have put on the table for now. Thank you.
Advocate Langa.
Chair, just to say, the last comments of the DJ, I'm not sure is correct, because if this is a bill introduced in Parliament, it's now this committee's bill, not the department's bill anymore. We now deal with it in terms of our legislative powers and so on. If you want to do further consultations, you can't do it on this bill, because this committee does that. So I think we should just be clear on that. I just don't want us to get our lines mixed up, but that's not important for now. I've just read this bill now, and everything I'm saying is subject to correction. I've not had a chance to go and look at the Companies Act. I've not had a chance to look at the Banks Act. But you know what it strikes me of this bill is, it's the famous saying, it's neither fish nor fowl. There's no winner of a first. I don't know how you translate that into the other vernaculars, but I think you see, the problem is that I have with this when you read it, I don't know at any given time. That's the one. I know the cuckoo part. I think we must be careful when we create institutions that we clear what they actually are. Because, you see, I imagine that the law, what these people call the law advisors, probably drafted a lot of this, and they have a certain technique of doing it. And it may be that the previous post office bank or whatever it's called is like this. But is this what we want? I mean, do we want a bank? Do we want a company? Or do we want something we call a bank and a company, but we then give it its body? Because that's what's happened here. You see, if you create a company, the Company Act applies and all the things of a Company Act then applies. If you want a bank, then there's much stringent issues that apply, and that's a bank, and there are huge protections for the public. What do? We start off in Section 1 and we say, the minister may take the necessary action, blah, 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 with share capital, and to create a certificate to commence issued the company in terms of the Companies Act. The post office shall be, and then there's a shareholder, and the name of the company is the South African Post Bank. So that seems to be a lot of gobbledygook, to be honest, because I don't fully understand what it is. Because if a company, you firstly start saying, we hereby create a company, it's applicable, the Company Act's applicable to it. Because then all the protections and all the things that's in the Company Act must apply to the company. But we don't say that. We just say you can create a company in terms of a certificate, then we don't say the Act applies further to it. Then what's even more puzzling is the next section, Section 4. Notwithstanding Section 15 of the Banks Act, now you imagine someone's going to then after that sentence say something about banks. But you don't. You then say, the company must be regarded as having authorized to form a company. The company has been authorized to form a company in terms of the Company Act. I don't know what that means. I don't know what, firstly, what is in Section 15 of the Banks Act that you're trying to exclude now, because you're obviously excluding something in the Banks Act. But then you're saying the company must form a company, which is completely incomprehensible. Then the next sentence, the company must be registered as a bank after it satisfies the requirements of the Bank Act. Now at this stage, complete confusion reigns, because not one of those sentences makes sense, number one, and number two, you don't know what you're creating. Then after that, in all the other sections, you then go and spell out what this company will be. This company is then a board. You're creating boards, you're creating staff and that for it. And then the rest of, forget everything what you said of the company and the Banks Act, you now go and create a completely entity with everything spelled out here. So my first issue is, what is this? Is it a bank? And if it's a bank, does all the protections of the Bank Act apply? Well, if I bank with this bank, will I have all the protections I have when I bank with Standard Bank? Because that's vital. I mean, if you want to create a bank, the first thing it must do is be a bank, not a company that's created in all other ways. It must be a bank that creates all the protections of a bank so that people go invest their money there, etc., etc. As soon as people start realizing this is not a bank, but this is a company created in a piece of legislation where the bank's requirements, whatever that may be, because I don't know what in the B part, in subsection 4.2, what you must comply with, because nothing else in this act actually says anything about it being a bank. So I don't know which parts of the Bank Act you have to comply with, because now then the next issue is, you would imagine that a bank operates in a certain way in terms of the law. None of that's been made applicable to this entity, this animal. Nowhere else is it, nowhere else yet does it mention, say, the section so-and-so of the Bank Act applies to it. So, you know, so the only thing of the bank that's mentioned, the Bank Act, is subsection 4.1, where it says, notwithstanding section 15, then it talks about companies, so you don't know what that means. And then the next one says, the company must be registered as a bank, complying with the requirements of the Bank Act. And then nowhere else does it actually say anything about banks and what they are and how that applies to this thing. Then it's got all its own new powers here, although it's called a bank. So I can go in more detail, but I think the point has been made. I think we must sit down and conceptualize what it is we want. If we want a bank, then you must create a bank. If you want a company, you must create a company. If you want to create a statutory body as you are creating here now, then you must create a statutory body. And then you must carefully go and look at the Companies Act and the Bank Act and what you must want to make applicable to it, which I don't think we've done. We've not made anything of the Companies Act or the Bank Act except in Section 3 or 4, which is your procedural point. We've made none of that applicable to the animal that's been created. So that's the first big area which I suggest needs some re-looking. The second part of my questions is, you know, since I've been involved in this committee, we have picked up a whole lot of areas we've thought where the relationships are not spelled out very clearly between entities and companies and boards, and I thought we would have learned from that, that we would have by now said this is more or less what we want as we try to fix up in the SABC. But none of those lessons have been learned. With creating the bank, the post office is going to become the sole shareholder. On behalf of government, nowhere do we spell out who's going to make policy. Nowhere in this document is policy mentioned. Who's going to make policy for this bank? This is a bank that we're creating specially for the poor and the needy and so on. We don't spell out how the policy relationship, how the minister is going to relate vis-a-vis the post office, then the post office vis-a-vis the bank. Nowhere are those relations spelled out. Nowhere are the policies, how the policies are going to, and who's going to make policy on this. The second issue is conflicts of interest. I thought we are ad idem in this committee. The people that are sitting here have all said we do not anymore want to create structures where people can belong to the body, but they just declare their interest. I think we've clearly said that if you have a conflict of interest, you don't sit on these boards, you don't participate, you don't get tenders, you don't get all these things. What are you going to do in the bill? You're just going to say, declare these things, then it's fine. Once you've declared your interest, you just go ahead. You remain a board member. So all the problems that we have today with conflicts of interest, millions and millions of rands that have been stolen from SABC, we're entrenching that same model into this piece of legislation. When we've already said it's completely flawed, it's wrong, it has to be changed. That people that have conflicts of interest cannot sit on boards and merely just declare their interest. That's out. It's stopped. It has to stop. Because that is where the corruption is coming in. I sit there, I look at all these contracts, I know which contracts are being for. I form a company, and then I enter, and then I just declare, I'm a director of this company. And then we just go ahead, don't get dory. If you go and look at section 613 and 16 A, B, C, D, we've created exactly that flawed model that we've had all the time we've created again. And I thought that this should be abundantly clear to the pardon. We are totally and utterly opposed to that model. Then the next issue is we're trying to create, we've got a letter here today to say about the evaluation procedures of ICASA. We're creating another board here. We don't say a single thing about evaluation of the directors, of the board of directors. All the things we've spoken about, we've done. We're now leaving out of this model again. So all the good best practices we're starting to develop in this committee, we're not actually implementing in this piece of legislation. So that's a huge problem as well. There's no evaluation model. In fact, this one's going to be more problematic because the direct shareholder is not government. The direct shareholder is the post office. So government relates to the post office, then the post office relates to the bank. The relationship is even more tenuous. It's even more difficult. And yet, we've not created any kind of evaluation systems, any way to hold people to account to make sure that they do as we're wanting to do with ICASA. Then I must say, and I know this doesn't come from you, the department, I think this comes from the law advisors, and I hope someone will start telling them they're wrong. They're very foolish, you know. I mean, when they must go and learn what PAJA is all about. PAJA is the promotion of administrative justice. It's when the department, for example, makes a decision to give a license and so on, then you let the Audi Artem apply and everything that's in the PAJA legislation. Here, for the removal of board members, for the removal of board, it's labor relations. They are making PAJA applicable. I mean, it's unbelievable. Subject to PAJA, the minister must remove a member from the board. I mean, these people must really go and read the Paja. They keep on doing this in legislation. They try and make it applicable to every. If you want the Audi Artem Partem to apply, you don't have to say Paja applies. You say, give the person a right to respond before you actually do so. That's what you say. But they keep on making the whole Paja, which is a complicated piece of legislation that applies to administrative action. They are making applicable to labor relations and to the removal of people. We're creating a whole mess of the area of labor relations. People like Frink Haysom have written on these issues. They've written why labor relations do not fall under Paja. It's not an administrative law. If you have to make every piece of every action of government that relates to labor between each and employees have to make it applicable to Paja, the country will grind to a halt. Because every time you want to do something to an employee, you'll say to them, I want to now give you a final warning. You must now go through the whole Paja procedure. It creates chaos. It creates madness. So I don't know why we must really, DG, we mustn't even listen to the law advisors on this issue. Ignore them. Go and get your own legal advice and go and deal with these things in a proper way. What you're doing here, you're creating a nightmare for your department and you're creating a nightmare for this bank to try and remove people and so on. There are a lot of issues, but I think we've said this is a first step. But I do think we have to sit down and conceptualize this thing differently. If it's a bank we want, we must then look at it as a bank. If it's a company we want, we must look at it as a company and then what we want to add onto it. And if it's a new statutory body we want to create, which seems what it is here, then we must look at that and see what powers we want to give it. But we can't take all three, then throw them into a pot, and then think we're going to get a nice stew out of it. Because here we're putting fish, chicken, and meat into the same pot. Now, I don't know if this is going to be a new South African dish called fish flakes and pop or whatever, but it's not going to work. We must get our legal lines very clearly, and I think we've mixed them up here. So, Chair, those are just the issues I want to just raise as a first bite at the cherry. Thanks.
No, this was a bite at a sandwich, not at a cherry. Look, members, I want us to keep the comments brief, because this is really, the bill is now with us. I think that Vicar Delanga is correct. It's no longer in the hands of the department or the minister. It's in our hands. And we're going to have to, look at all the, I think these are important, very important issues that have been raised. That you must get conceptual clarity first about what we're trying to establish, what kind of a structural institution that we're trying to establish. But we can't resolve those issues. I think we're just flagging them now so that we get a taste of what's in front of us. I've got at the moment three hands, Mr. Van der Berg, Julie Killian, and Nsiki. Are there any other hands? Fine, so we'll take those three hands and then we will determine a way forward after that.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Advocate Elonga, for your legal perspective on this. I absolutely agree with you when I listen to you, Mr. Elonga, as an ordinary person. And I'm looking at, not as a legal person, just an ordinary man. And when we listened to Mr. Nick Beale from the post office this morning, and in the whole objective of the post office bank and everything, then I wonder why, do the poor people in the rural areas of South Africa really need a bank? Or do they need just a service as what the post office rendered to them up to this stage? This is it's actually a clear thing. It's not necessary to create, as Mr. DeLonga called it, the one of other strange animal. All the people need his service. And when you create a bank or whatever, you have to pay fees for the transactions and everything. It will boil down to the ordinary people in the rural areas, and it will cost them more to be part of this thing. And I think we must reconsider this. And just a final opinion. If it's a company, you stated why this bank, Post Bank, does not have to comply to all the sections of the Companies Act. This is ridiculous, Mr. Chairperson. which the company must comply to the acts of the Companies Act. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. Just three comments and then just wanted to refer to the bill specifically. First of all, I align myself fully with the comments made by Honourable De Lange. I'm also totally confused about this type of animal and what is of real serious concern to me is that we have established certain bodies. We've really created funny animals without proper accountability, public accountability. And it's very often the result of shoddy legislation that we are creating clumsy bodies. We're appointing a lot of people to actually oversee functions, and in the end, the buck stops nowhere. There's real lack of accountability. So just by way of general comment, I want to say I'm very concerned about this proposed structure here. Secondly, I want to differ slightly from Honourable Van der Berg, that I believe that there is a need out there for ordinary people to have access to banking services without the excessive tariff structures that our commercial banks are charging. All of us are complaining, but clearly it is way out of line of ordinary people. They need a specific facility. But thirdly, Honourable Chair, we have an immense responsibility to protect the monies of those very, very disadvantaged communities. And that is why my concern about what are we creating. If we are going to say this is this funny thing, it's a mix between a bank and a company and an open sort of a public institution, what are we creating? So we... And that brings me just to, in addition to the points that Honourable De Lange has raised, I want to just raise the two additional ones, and that is the managing director. Who is ultimately the accounting officer in terms of the PFMA? Somebody must be held accountable. And secondly, the board. Is it not going to be, again, one of these huge bodies where you have committees, etc.? Again, I want to support Honourable De Lange. This is the model, and I don't know if it's the same sort of state law advisor who's coming forward with this model that has failed South Africa so far. To come up with a model where you recreate different sort of committees, and in terms of reference, it's additional meetings, it's additional costs. You need a board that is at arm's length with any conflict of interest. But that is at arm's length, and that is not duplicating the role of those people who are appointed on the basis of their knowledge, on the basis of their specific experience and their qualifications. So you cannot duplicate the functions of the people, the staff that are responsible, headed by the accounting officer, which is apparently now called the managing director, but you have to look at the details of this very carefully. And Chair, therefore, I would like to propose the following. I can see that as a committee, we would have to engage on the Companies Act, the Banks Act, and get some legal advice before, and that is my second proposal, that we study this, that we identify the weaknesses in other boards that have reported to us and to other committees, also those boards that have reported to public enterprise. And what are the deficiencies in those structures? Why have we seen SOEs collapsing? Are there problems within the legislation? What is it that we've created there as an organ of state? And secondly, that we then well au fait with the structure that we are setting up, and that we then say, this is what we so far identify as weaknesses in this act, and therefore, thereafter we go out to public consultation on this, so that we can also hear from other bodies and individuals and institutions to say, these are their comments. So I'm not sort of totally stuck on my proposal on what we do first, We clearly need to go into public hearings, but I would really like to urge that we just first analyze cut it in pieces, you know, just really sort of taking it apart. Let us dissect this piece, this animal, so that we all know what are the critical deficiencies that we've identified so far. With those comments by Honorable Zelanga, I would like to just conclude to say that we really need to get into this and get the right sort of institution out of this that will benefit those communities that at this stage don't have access to affordable banking services. Thank you, Chair.
Nsiki?
Chair, let me just thank the department for bringing this piece of legislation, the proposed piece of legislation, to the portfolio committee. I think this piece of legislation is overdue piece of legislation. Some of us who have been sitting in this committee, we know about this proposal of having a post bank, but because I think as government, the department, there are so many things that the department is working on. Now I think it's the time now to focus on this post bank proposal. And Chair, if I'm listening well to the comments of the Honorable Comrade Johnny Dilange, all the issues that he has raised, the concerns that he has raised, if you look to this bill, those concerns are being addressed, maybe, but the issue is the way the bill is being crafted. It's something else because he is a lawyer, but I'm a layperson, and I can understand and I can see where does this legislation take us to. And but Chair, also, I raised my hand because I was confused about this process. As a committee, are we dealing directly addressing the issues on the bill? Or the department, they came just to introduce the bill so that, you know, firstly, it must go to political parties where we sit down with our own leaders. In the ANC, you have your whip and the chair. We look at the bill as now as political parties, because I think we have policies that we have agreed to that we will implement. And then from there, As a portfolio committee, now we dissect. That's the word that they use. It's a new word. We dissect now as a portfolio committee, because we'll be coming from our political parties, you know, with different understanding. That's why I raised my hand. But nevertheless, Chairperson, I will still propose that let's have our own positive comments, because some of us, we know we're not starting from the scratch. So, and we go back to our political parties in our study groups, and we look at this piece of legislation, and we come back and we raise, we debate, and we change where we want to change, and also the department will do so. I don't think that Chair, this bill, it's a bad bill. I think it's a very positive one. It's the question that we have only received, you know, this bill today. So we are somehow disadvantaged. And we congratulate Johnny, you know, he has run because he's a lawyer, so he knows these things. But as a layperson, I am really happy. And it's not a bad thing, you know. I think people on the rural areas, they need this bank, Mr. Beck. I am also banking
with the post office. That is why I am going to be vocal to make sure that it happens, because I'm also, you know, their client. Thanks. So, Chairperson, I would be wasting your time. You see, my concern was that, as my colleague here is saying, it's not the first time that we really hear of this post. It has been in the committee for quite a long time, this proposal. But I was also concerned, you see, with me, you won't doubt what you can see my facial appearance when something is wrong. Because I can't, my head goes this way and the other way. I think, Chairperson, you saw me. Because this procedure that we are taking today is very different. Now I'm trying to ask myself whether people are saying to us, no, you mustn't refer to the third parliament, this is fourth parliament. And I think that is why maybe you have this new procedure of dealing with things. I think Tiki has addressed, because this is not the way we deal with legislation as this committee. If this has been introduced to us, as Tiki has said already, I think there is a way of dealing with the bill, because already we have tapped into areas that we are supposed to discuss on our own. Thank you. And I just wanted to say to Honorable Kilian, who are these ordinary people she's referring to? The ordinary people who need this bank.
All right. No, Congress, thank you very much. I think what we are very clear about, let me just clarify the process. This bill has now been tabled in Parliament. Of course, parties will engage with it on their own terms and come to whatever decisions they want to arrive at in terms of the concept, what needs to be changed, etc. But there is nothing unusual about the procedure. All that is happening today is that the department and the minister is introducing for us to begin to think about this thing, to see what's involved in this thing. No decisions are being made. And that's standard procedure. Normally when a bill is tabled in Parliament, the department and the minister will come and present, give us an overview of things, etc. And then it's our reading. From there we go and we dissect, we cut it into pieces, we amend, we panel read, whatever we want to do with it. You know all the words. What I want to suggest is that a number of suggestions have been made. I'd like if the Parliamentary Legal Unit can start preparing for documentation on the Companies Act and the Banks Act, and to have some legal approach to banking. How are banks managed and controlled in our system? I think I don't know much about banks and all of those things. So if the Parliamentary Legal Unit can get the legislation, and we will look at the time frames. It might have to be clear to members so that during the research, etc., they can study these things a bit more carefully. Then if the research unit can prepare for us a concept paper, and you might have to discuss this with people in Treasury, the division there, but a concept paper on how banks are structured in this country and what's the governance model. So you have private banks and then you have a reserve bank, but just how banks are structured for our own, for members. And if that could be circulated in a week or two, it might be useful. So if you just email it to all the members, we can start reading about that. The third thing is that I take it there's been a suggestion that the committee will have to consider public hearings on this. We don't have to decide on the time frame now. But in the first quarter of next year, depending on our program, etc., I just need an in-principle decision that this is sufficiently important for us to hold public hearing because it deals with, you know, with money of the public, millions of people who might be working, supporting this bank and their savings, etc. So if we get an in-principle decision, then we can do the rest of it afterwards. What I think we are quite clear about is that we support the principle of a postal bank. That's what this bank, well, what this body is trying to introduce. And Mr. Van den Berg, as I understand, a bank, you deposit your money in the bank for safekeeping, and you must have confidence that there are board of directors there that are sufficiently honest and that your money is in safe hands. That's the basic thing about a bank. But the other side of the bank is the bank gives loans, which the post bank at this stage does not do. So if there are people out over in the country, etc., who need small loans, etc., right? So that's basically, as I understand it, as your layperson, two functions of a bank is safekeeping of your deposits, and then you have the opportunity of a loan, which can't be done at the moment. That's why we're talking of setting up a separate bank. We accept the principle of that, that it's a service that can be reached out to many more people through the post bank. All right. Gigi, I have seen your hand, yes, and then we can just decide on the public hearings.
Chairperson, thank you very much. I think it's important from the department's perspective that we at least address some of the issues that were raised here today, because we don't want to walk out of this room and leave people with a misconception that we have presented a bill not only to Cabinet, but to the National Assembly and this portfolio committee, which has not been thought out properly, which has not been properly analyzed, which has not been read over and over again. Honourable Member Dilanga, I want to reassure you that this bill has been looked at by several lawyers. Not only the state law, not only the state law advisor, but it has been looked at by lawyers within the Department of Communications. And fortunately enough, I'm equally a lawyer and an admitted attorney. I have read this bill. Now, I think it is important that we just emphasize that you must read Section 1, Section 2, and Section 3 carefully. Section 3 says that a public company will be registered, and its sole member will be the South African Post Office. Then, having set up that particular company at the initiation of the Minister of Communications, then there is an obligation for that company to then be registered in terms of the Banks Act. You will find that when you get advice from the legal advisors, as the chairperson has indicated, in terms of the Banks Act, it has to be a registered company. So unfortunately, you cannot just go straight and register as a bank. You need to set up an entity that will then go and be registered in terms of the Banks Act. There is no other way out of it. You have to do that. Now, in terms of the Banks Act, it then lays out the specific requirements that an entity must meet in order to be a bank as required in terms of the laws of South Africa. So that is why there's specific reference to the provisions of the Banks Act and the requirement that they be that specific registration in terms of the Banks Act. So if you go back and you read it, Section 3 just lays out the corporatization process, which is the registration of the company as a public company, and then Section 4 validates the fact that then that company has to go through a process in terms of the Banks Act. So I suggest you please read it carefully. You will see exactly what I'm dealing with and what is being raised there. Secondly, Chairperson, could I please have the protection of the House that I actually deal with these specific issues? Secondly, I want to also make it very clear. In my concluding remarks, the intention was not to say we are usurping, or as a department we are saying this is still our bill. I think it must be made crystal clear. All I was alluding to is that at a certain point, the committee can make a decision on whether or not you want to have public hearings on this matter. It is not that I believe this bill belongs to the department. It gets out of the hands of the department as soon as it's adopted by Cabinet. Then it goes into the National Assembly and it becomes the bill of the committee. We make representations like any other members of the public. The only responsibility we have thereafter is obviously as custodians to then take it forward and make sure that the provisions are implemented. Now, the argument that was raised is that we are not learning from history, we are not learning from historical challenges, and we're just going to let this so-called animal, I believe it's not an animal, it is a company that will be registered in terms of the Banks Act, which is a legally recognized procedure and a legally recognized entity. Now, if you note, one of our last slides specifically said the minister will have the right to make regulations. In those regulations, the minister will then lay out the policy propositions with regard to the provisions of that will regulate the post bank. So there is no intention to just let it have free rein and just go of its own accord. There will be specific regulations. And when we get into the debates and the discussions on that, then we will obviously outline what is intended with regard to that regulation-making process. But our intention is that when the regulations are made, it will lay out the policy. Now, on the issue about the performance management system that is being suggested to be put in place for the board, we are sitting here with somewhat of a challenge.
You will recall there has been great debate in the public about the Public Broadcasting Services Bill, whereby there is a proposal in that specific bill to mirror what is in the ICASA Act, but in the form of a performance agreement for specific for board members. And this is a proposal that is being put forth by the shareholder. I am very heartened and glad that I'm hearing clear commitment from this committee that you are agreeing with such a performance management system being put in place. And I really appreciate it if the committee could then enter into this public discussion that is taking place on that and say that this is now going to be the way and the direction with regard to policy in relation to dealing with boards, that there must now be a specific performance management system that is put in place. Because what we have heard from some of the members of the committee in public discourse is to say, no, the minister wants to micromanage. And don't forget, with regards to the Post Bank, this is not an entity which is, this is not an entity where the minister has direct control, and I think you've actually alluded to that fact. It is an entity where SAPO will be the entity that has control over this entity. So we need to be very clear as to the role definition. If we are now saying that the minister must now put in place a performance management system for a board that will not even be controlled by him, but will be controlled by SAPO, let us be very clear and also outline the modalities of how he will do that, because he is not the entity that has direct control over the Post Bank. It is a wholly owned subsidiary of SAPO. So I think I agree completely with what you're saying, Chairperson. Maybe it's important for the committee to go back, workshop the provisions, understand the provisions, look at the different pieces of legislation as we as a department have done, because this bill is a long time coming. And I think Honourable Member Magaza and Mastery have indicated that this is long overdue. Debates and discussions on this bill have been taking place for the past 4 years. And the South African public has been worse off as a consequence of that, because as we've indicated, this is a bill that is critical for rural development and ensuring that people who are in rural areas have access to banking facilities, which they currently do not have. To just simply say you leave it as is in the system as an entity within SAPO, I don't believe meets the real intention of trying to bridge the digital divide or the access to financial services. Because in this particular case, you're saying even if it is the savings of an old woman sitting in a rural area who is only saving 200 rand, it must have the same protection that a person who banks with Absa, Standard Bank, FNB has gets as protection. So that is the rationale for this particular piece of legislation that gives every South African an opportunity not only to financial services, but protected and legislatively proclaimed financial services. So that is the rationale for actually moving from the current status quo to this model that is being proposed here today. But we'll obviously look forward, Honourable Member, Honourable Chairperson, to actually having further interactions with the committee with regard to the specific provisions of the bill and the rationale and the thinking behind the specific provisions of the bill. And I think it will also be important, Chairperson, for members of the committee to have access to the MOU that was signed between the Minister of Communications and the Minister of Finance, and to have access to the white paper that actually gave rise to the present piece of legislation that we have, so that people can then understand how we get to the provisions that we get to. Not that we obviously set and did not quite conceptualize and understand what we're putting forth. It was important that we actually go through a lengthy process, make sure we are clear on the modalities, ensure that we then come up with a well-reasoned, well-thought-out, and well-presented bill. But we'll obviously engage on the specifics as we go forward. And I think it's also important that we take note of the fact that the Reserve Bank was actually consulted extensively, and they are the custodians of the Banks Act. They are responsible with regard to establishment of banks and all those and issues incidental thereto. But I'll leave it in your hands, Chairperson, to indicate to us as to where we can take this matter going forward. Thank you very much.
No, I think that's quite clear. Members and department and SAPO, I'm a little bit concerned. You know, we're not setting the right tone. We don't have to be adversarial about this thing or even defensive. It's the first introduction. We're going to have to work through this thing. It's really in our hands. And I think we are all committed to getting the best piece of legislation to legally cover this bank that we want to establish. It is in the public interest, and I have full confidence that as a team, when we work together, we work through all the issues. And at the end of the day, we will have conceptual clarity, there will be agreement, because this doesn't have to be politically contentious. This is in the public interest, it's there for literally millions of people. We need a good bank, an effective functioning bank that's in good hands and is properly managed. And I have no doubt that as a committee, over the next few months, we will put the framework in place, the legal framework in place for that. The proposal of public hearings, are we in agreement that for this matter we should be hosting public hearings? The date and all those things we'll sort out, the logistics we'll sort out later on. But it will be in the first quarter of next year. Do I see agreement on that? Thank you very much then. I think we are... No, not now. All right. Members and everybody else, this is, I think, the last meeting for the year. It's been a very, very hectic year. Short parliamentary session for us, but I think this committee has been exceptionally busy. I want to thank each and every one of the committee, members of the committee, for the dedication, the commitment. You have been very, very committed, I must say. You've worked long hours. I've often eaten into your lunchtime, your tea breaks, as we did today again. I thank you for your perseverance, your patience, and your understanding, and your support. And I wish you a good resting period and a wonderful recess, Christmas, and New Year. We meet you hopefully in one piece next year sometime. So thank you very much for all that you've done. Mr. Van der Werf?
Yes, sir. Thank you, Chairperson. And I want to also to thank you for the way you handled this committees. You were very calm, mostly calm, and so on. Thank you, and also a good rest for you and your family. Thank you for your leadership.
Gigi and department, thanks a million. We're going to see you tomorrow. At least I'm going to see you tomorrow. Oh, yes. How many members are interested in going to this broadband policy conference? Because the department wants to know. Okay, can we just say that before you leave, if you are going to the conference tomorrow, it's at Gallagher Estate, please give your name over to either to the DG or to GIFS, so that the logistical arrangements can be made for you. For everybody else, thank you very much, Post Office, for a very good presentation, and we wish you everything over the Christmas and the New Year, and we'll see you sometime next year with your budget and your annual plans, and my strategic plans, is that what it's called. Thank you very much, and good luck to all of you. Thank you.